Nick!
Gentleman!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant.
Oh. All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the WGN Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive, coming up right here on 720 WGN. And it is Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah, baby, Wild Card Wednesday.
You program all the music bumps every morning on the show, and today it's Wild Card Wednesday, which means any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Good morning, everybody. It is time for our monthly visit with Jim Ryan. He is a music guy, writes about entertainment and music for Forbes and other places. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Lots of stuff that Jim has seen concert-wise, festival-wise. He's done some interviews that we're going to talk about. And, of course, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees for 2020 have been announced, and that's always an interesting conversation. So we will do that. We'll go through all the nominees and talk about the snubs and the surprises and who we think deserve to actually get inducted, not just nominated. And it's always a fun and, you know, aggravating conversation to have. And also, we will play a round of Rock of Ages, little music trivia that that we will play. Tom and Jim and I will go head-to-head in a music trivia game called Rock of Ages. So, always fun to talk to Jim. He's in the PPG Paints Green Room right now, the wonderful, beautiful PPG Paints Green Room. And we'll bust him in here in just a few minutes to talk music and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Wildcard Wednesday requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and stay connected with us the best way, which is Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's interactive. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page. So like us and follow us now, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Let me say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How about them Cardinals?
get your brooms out, kids.
Oh, man. That was fun. You know, it was fun for many reasons. One, you know, the Cardinals lost. Not only did they lose and are they not going to the World Series, but they got swept. And the story, you know, the national story is kind of cool, too. This is the first World Series in that franchise's history. I mean, they were once the Expos, but now, you know, they're the Nationals. So but the last World Series was in 33 in that city, in D.C. So it's been a long time since they've had a World Series. So there's a nice story there. It's like the long-suffering fans are finally going to get a World Series in their city. First time for this franchise, so that's awesome. Dave Martinez, who is the manager for the Nationals, ex-Cub, and you know, has a nice connection with the Cubs. It's good to see him. You know, and he had like some heart issues, and he got through that and everything. And they were at the end of May this season. Washington was, they were 12 games under 500. And now they're going to the World Series. It's a great story.
It just goes to show.
Yeah.
It just goes to show anything can happen.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great story. And of course, if you're a Cubs fan, you love the fact that the Cardinals got swept. The other thing that I was thinking about was while the celebrations were happening, You know, and while, you know, in four games, the Nationals beat the Cardinals to get to the World Series, what was going through Bryce Harper's mind? What do you think was happening with Bryce Harper? Bryce Harper's sitting at home going, oh, man. Yeah. People are saying, I guess it was Bryce Harper who was holding them back.
And you want to know what's really funny?
Mm.
Today, October 16th,
yeah,
is his birthday.
Oh, no, it is?
Oh, man. Poor Bryce.
Oh, man.
Yeah, October 16th, 1992.
By the way, the owner of the Washington Nationals was there, and yesterday was his birthday, so when they won the game, got the pennant, and it was announced that they were going to the World Series, he turned 94, and he was there.
You're kidding me.
He was there when they were handing out the MVP, and they were handing out the pennant award. I love how they, you know, when they have these games, I love how they immediately, like 2 seconds after the final out, people are running out on the field, handing out T-shirts, pennants, and hats. Like that, the products are ready to go. Like they're ready with them, and I always find that really cool.
Well, because they've all been made for both teams,
right? Right, and so. the ones, you know, the losers, they get shipped off to play to countries and places where people don't have clothing,
mm-hmm.
and then so you'll see people in other countries wearing, you know, like National League champ Chicago Cubs from, you know, 2017, T-shirts and hats and stuff.
Is it bad that I would kind of want to get my hands on one of those? Like team things that never happened?
I know that they destroy a lot of them too, but I know that that exists. I mean, you know, you've seen in the past sporting events where they're setting up the champagne, they're putting the plastic all over the lockers, and then something happens and they lose. They got to clean all that up. They got to take all that down. You know, put the champagne away, put the merch away someplace. Maybe, you know, you got one more day. But if it's a game seven, you got that happening on both sides.
Right.
Both locker rooms.
Mm-hmm. I would love to have my hands on like a, I don't know, Chicago Bears.
1984 World Series champ Chicago Cubs.
Yeah. Or a Chicago Bears for 07.
Yeah.
That'd be just interesting to have because it's like a total alternate universe where that happened.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, that was fun. And I'm rooting for the Nationals because one, screw the Yankees, and two, the Astros won last year. So, and it's a great underdog story. The Nationals is a great underdog story.
When's the last time a franchise had a repeat in baseball? It's been a long.
It's got to be the Yankees, right?
Probably. I'm not sure of that, but
we have to look back at it. That's another thing, Yankees. Why do they need to go to another World Series? Yankees. So anyway, that was fun. It is, let's see, it's Wednesday morning here, Wildcard Wednesday. Oh, and by the way, Know Your Role is coming up, or Know Your Onion. Know Your Role. I've turned into The Rock. Know Your Role and shut your mouth. Know Your Onion. Another round of Know Your Onion is coming up. That's later in the show. That's where our host, Tom, reads a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's a real news headline or a news headline from The Onion, the fake news satirical comedy newspaper. The world is so weird right now, and the news headlines are so insane that it's hard to decide whether or not it's a real news headline or an Onion news headline. So Know Your Onion. You guess whether it's real or it's from The Onion, and you win. We get two contestants to call in. They play solo rounds each, and then we are crowned a winner. We will also be talking about the world of movie test screenings and how so many movies have been changed simply by test screenings, where audiences see the movie well ahead, fill out cards, opinion cards, and then some major changes have happened to movies over the course of the years because of test screenings. Some filmmakers are pro test screenings. Most are con. But it's interesting to see some of these movies that we all know and love and how they were altered or changed because of test screenings. Goodfellas being one of them. It got terrible test screen results, if you can believe that, back in 1990. Also, the McRib is back, as we've discussed before. The finest fast food sandwich in the history of fast food sandwiches. And so we're going to talk about some of the best limited run fast food items So that's all coming up on the show. Our phone lines are 312-981-7200 for talk or text. And download our podcasts. Lots and lots and lots of people listen to our podcast. We thank you for that. It's awesome. And all you got to do is go to iTunes or where you get your podcasts, subscribe. It's free. They will be sent automatically to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. All right. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, pal?
Doing just fine.
Yeah. Did you see any of the game?
Yeah, I watched parts of it. I was getting ready for work, so... Yeah, I watched the most important part, the first inning.
The first inning, seven runs in that
first
inning.
That was exciting, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not a Cardinals fan, it was exciting. Yeah.
Well, we're in Chicago here. We're not supposed to be Cardinals
fans. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
Some hooping and hollering going on in the apartment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a fun World Series, just because of the Nationals. So.
I'm still trying to figure out who to root for because I don't like the... Baby Shark thing that the Nationals do. That's annoying to me. I don't know if I can watch that.
The song is annoying, but what they did to it, how they altered it and how they changed it and how there are grown men wearing full shark costumes in the crowd just cracks me up.
I like the fans that are wearing the shark uniforms. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it's funny. I think it's really funny. And it's infinitely more acceptable than the tomahawk chop, which is not only stupid but offensive. And it's incredible to me that Braves fans still do that. So
as long as it's, I really hate the Ohio State University.
Oh yeah,
come on, let it go, just let it go.
Yeah. So all right, weirdness in sports. We covered that yesterday on the show. Weird traditions and superstitions and stuff. So we covered all that. But Vic's in the newsroom. He'll be here all morning till 5. And Tom is producing, and I'm your host. And we are going to take a break when we come back. Our good buddy Jim Ryan is going to be here. We'll do a round of Rock of Ages. And Tom and Jim and I will go head-to-head in a battle of wits in some music trivia. And tons of music to talk about with Jim Ryan, including the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and nominees for 2020. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio downtown Chicago, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, in fact. And we're here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. And, it's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday, and we'll get your requests going later. We'll give me a Wildcard Wednesday, and that's any artist, any song, anything. Also coming up, we're going to talk about... the world of movie test screenings and how they have changed films in the past. The McRib is back, and so we're going to talk about some of the limited-run fast food items that we love, and we'll do a round of Know Your Onion. That's all coming up on this Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And Jim Ryan, he joins us usually about once a month. He writes about music and entertainment for Forbes and other places. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. We have him come in and we talk the latest in music news and interviews and concerts and festivals. And this morning, Jim, we get to talk about the 2020 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees.
Hits and misses.
Yeah,
Nick.
Yeah. As always,
right.
So we'll save that for a little bit later on because that's going to take a lot of energy. And then we'll have a round of. Rock of Ages, which is Tom and Jim and I in a head-to-head music trivia competition, and it's called Rock of Ages.
Hoping to fare better in that than I did the
last time around.
I think you did.
I did. I won last time. Yeah. Okay. So we'll see what happens. So how you been?
Good.
Yeah. Keeping busy.
Busy.
Yeah.
But good.
But summer's now officially over.
Yeah. It definitely felt like it the last 2 days.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of us are getting hit, you know, kicked in the face by viruses at this point.
I'm going to go wash my hands.
Yeah, wash your hands. Eat your vitamins. You know what Hulk Hogan says.
I was just going to say. Thanks, Hulk.
That's right. Liz Phair. We just heard a little Liz Phair.
Oh, my God.
I love Liz Phair.
So do I.
And, you know, I'm old enough to remember when Liz Phair used to just... Everywhere you went in Wicker Park, she was there.
Right.
In the early 90s. And then when Exile came out, Exile and Guyville came out, like that record is landmark.
Right.
And she's a legend. A legend. There were a couple albums that she released I wasn't crazy about. You know, when she went a little poppy.
Yeah.
What's that egg album? What's it called?
White Chocolate Space Egg. Yeah. The one with Polyester Bride.
Yeah.
See, I love Polyester Bride, though.
Yeah, I do too. I had some issues with that record, though. I don't know. But Guyville is one of my favorite albums. I mean, seriously,
yeah,
it's a landmark record. And she rules. And she's written a book.
She has.
Well, no, so but you were at the, what is it, Chicago Voices?
Yeah, Chicago Ideas Week,
Ideas Week was
going on this week. And she had two appearances tonight. She did a live interview at Pritzker Pavilion with Jessica Hopper, who used to write for Pitchfork, who I think was editor at MTV News. But they had a live conversation on stage, which was really good. And then she did a second event a couple of hours later at Harris Theater behind Millennium Park, which was a series of three live interviews. It was her and Jessica Hopper again briefly. And then the big one was Brian Grazer interviewing Taraji Henson.
Yeah.
The two of them kind of back and forth in conversation. So it was
Taraji P. Henson, because she wants to separate herself from all the other Taraji Hensons.
There are, yes, it's a crowded field.
There are so many Taraji Hensons out there, it's important that she has that P in the middle.
Brian Grazer's an interesting guy.
Yeah. Well, for people who don't know, Brian Grazer is Ron Howard's partner.
Right.
In producing films and television. And he's an interesting guy. He's outspoken. He's very flamboyant.
Very.
And he's got some hair. One of the things that Brian Grazer is known for is his hair.
Yeah,
he's got some hair. But
looks like a porcupine.
He's a fun guy to watch. Clearly an incredibly successful producer in the field of television and film.
They put together a brief package of kind of his highlights of his films and TV work.
It's
the documentaries he's been involved in and everything with Ron Howard. And it's just kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, Imagine Entertainment is the company that he and Ron Howard run.
Yeah.
And you see his name on a lot of very successful things. What was that conversation like? I would imagine, because they're both flamboyant. Like, Taraji P. Henson is, I don't know if she was subdued last night.
No, she was not.
But she gets out there, and she goes, and she's a very, very entertaining person to watch when you see her on talk shows and things like that. But I can imagine when it was just the two of them on stage.
Two of them. That was it.
Man.
With no script.
No ref?
No ref, no script. I think she said they had never met somehow, despite being, I think he's got his hands in Empire.
He does, yes.
So
how is that possible that they've never met?
I think that's what she said when they took the stage.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's what she said. But it was interesting. I mean, she talked about how invested she gets in her characters.
Yeah.
And I mean, even though
she loves Cookie,
even though Brian's not on the acting side, you could tell he's obviously got a real passion for everything he does, too.
Yeah.
So it was definitely two extraordinarily passionate people about what they do. She was interesting. I mean, she kept talking about how much she does. She came up wanting to do the stage, didn't want to do more television, but then, like you said, became extraordinarily invested in the Cookie character.
It's become like her bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been really good in a lot of movies.
And I was going to say Hidden Figures. They talked about Hidden Figures.
Absolutely. Yeah. And she's had a very successful career in film, but it's the Cookie character that has really just completely taken off.
Well, Brian Grazer said today he's going to find her a comedy film vehicle. So the last one
wasn't so good.
What was the last one?
It was the switching the sexes of the movie. Remember the movie where Mel Gibson gets banged on the head and he can hear what women are thinking?
I don't remember this, actually. No.
You don't remember? What the hell is it called? What Women Want?
Is it a YouTube video starring Mel Gibson?
No, it was a big movie. It was a big movie. And it
like
made,
recently?
No, maybe 10 it's, years well, ago, 10, 15 years ago.
This is after all his issues.
No, before.
Oh, okay.
Before
it was him and Helen Hunt, right?
It was him and Helen Hunt.
And that's What Women Want.
What Women Want.
And then this is What Men Want.
Taraji P. Henson gets bumped on the head and she can hear what the inner thoughts are.
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, wow. No, but this was from earlier this year.
Wow.
Here's
okay.
the thing, though. The fundamental problem with the idea of doing a gender switch on this is because it's not hard to figure out what men want. Men are not complicated. Women are. Men can't figure out women. Women can figure out men.
I don't know. Mel Gibson might be complicated, though. I don't think I want to know what Mel Gibson
wants. Well, I'll tell you something. The guys in What Men Want weren't. One of them included Tracy Morgan. Not a guy that you go, well, geez, I wonder what's on his mind. I'm going to get you all pregnant. That's what he usually says when he's into talk shows. All right, hang on a second. We'll finish the conversation about Brian Grazer and his hair and Taraji P. Henson. And then I want to talk more about Liz Phair
cool.
and her book. Okay, that's more coming up. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the world of movie test screenings. McRib is back, so we're going to talk about limited run fast food items. And we'll play a role, a Know Your Onion round. Jim Ryan's here. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
Welcome back, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
You bust in here once a month. We have some fun talking about music and all kinds of other stuff. We'll play a little Rock of Ages music trivia and all that cool stuff. And you were just at the Chicago Ideas Festival that was happening this week.
Had a nice conversation with Liz Fair, yeah.
Yeah, tell me about that.
She has a new book out, which is amazing, by the way. It's called Horror Stories.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually part one. The second part is coming soon, but that's going to be fairy tales. So this is the harder stuff to write about. This is a lot of the difficult stories that kind of made their way onto the Exile album. There's definitely parallels to be drawn between the two. Gets into the Me Too stuff a bit. The Horror Stories was the harder stuff to write. Fairy Tales is going to be the rock and roll stories everybody, she said, everybody seems to want. That part's coming next. But Horror Stories is out, and it's just an extremely honest. It's her memoirs.
Yeah.
It's not chronological. She kind of goes out of her way tonight to explain that she kind of views it like an album. It's a lot of short stories, so songs that aren't necessarily in chronological order. That's kind of how the book is arranged. So
yeah.
you get a story that happened in the 90s. Maybe you get one then followed by that happened 10 years ago. But it's extremely honest, and that was kind of one of the things we talked about, how difficult it would be to, I think, start writing in that realm and then maintain it over the course of an entire book, knowing full well you're going to go out there and it's going to be dissected by, you know, media people, by
fans. How long has the book been out?
About a week.
Yeah.
I think it came out last week, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it's brand new. I think she's doing a signing this week while she's in town. Up in Winnetka, I think that's this weekend. So,
had you ever interviewed her before?
I never had. I love Liz Fair. She would have been on my short list of people I really, really, really wanted to talk to.
Yeah.
So it was. She's working on all kinds of stuff. She's working on a new album. The first single came out yesterday. She's working with Brad Wood again for the first time, I think, since Exile in Guyville.
Yeah.
Casey Rice, I believe, is his name, who played guitar on that album, is back on this one. So it's kind of a. You know, for better or worse, she's always kind of done whatever she wants, really. I think, you know, musically, artistically, definitely doesn't look back a lot.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a rare moment for her in the last year or two, which it's been a lot of looking back. It was the Exile box set that came out last year for the 25th anniversary,
right.
You know, looking back in the book now and then, you know, kind of revisiting that collaboration with Brad Wood on a new album that's coming in 2020.
Yeah. Well, you know, the impact that Liz Fair made on music, especially locally, because she was such a main part of Chicago music scene, like a huge part of the Chicago music scene back in the late 80s, early 90s, and obviously into the mid 90s after Exile came out. She was just a staple, you know, especially in the Wicker Park scene. That following her career has always been really interesting, and the path that she's taken, and you know, she was a trailblazer as well, and that record, there really wasn't anything like it at the time or since.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm not sure there's been a lot since. Yeah, she one of the first things she said in the book, it was in the dedications, I mean, it's right at the very beginning, is that she was advised to be fearless, trust her instincts, and write the book as the maverick she'd been at the beginning of her career. And I asked her, I said, do you feel like you stopped being that maverick? And she kind of paused for a second and said, maybe a little, but you know, she's certainly not been afraid to kind of revisit anything that's a little bit controversial, but in a really good way, in a productive way, in a way of showing people make mistakes, people, you know, there's good and bad to every situation, and I think she's been kind of fearless, certainly, in examining that in the book.
Well, it's great. I can't wait to get the book.
That's really good.
Again, Tom's already read it.
So have I. Yeah, it's good.
And Tom said you're going to bring in your copy so I can read it.
Yeah, I'll bring you my copy because it's exactly like Jim described. It's one of those books that you can just tear through because it's so many little stories, but it tells such a big picture of what she went through and how she views the world.
And do we know around what time next year the Fairy Tales is coming out?
I'm not sure. She didn't say, but I think the album is scheduled for early 2020, and I would imagine they're probably going to coincide.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. That's cool that you got to interview her.
Yeah, she was.
She's a legend, man.
She's a legend. I like you said with Exile. I'm not sure anybody's examined a lot of those topics with the raw honesty that she has really before or since.
Yeah.
So in a way, as much as one of the things I respect the most, I think, about her as an artist is that fact that she always wants to do something different and try something new, regardless of what people think. She really doesn't care.
Yeah.
But kind of looking backward at some of this stuff, I think maybe it's more important to revisit Exile and Guyville and some of the topics that are discussed on that album.
Yeah.
In 2018, it might be more appropriate now than it was in 1993. That was one of the things I asked her. I said, "Can you believe we're still talking about some of these behaviors?" Yeah. I mean, when you started writing these stories that encompass the book, you know, looking back at them with hindsight being 2020, can you believe the world is still in this place that it's at 25 years later?
Sad. It is. How old is Liz Phair?
52, I think.
Yeah, I knew she was around she was around my age. I'm 54, and because I remember when the record came out, when Exile came out, I was dating a girl who was, I think, 4 years younger than me, and she lost her mind. You know what I mean? She lost her mind when she heard that record, and the contemporaries, the female contemporaries that I hung out with, all the women that I hung out with, that album was everywhere. Like, every woman that I knew who were in their mid to late 20s had that record and listened to it religiously. Like, it was massive, and it was an important record, as you know, on every level. And obviously a lot of men listened to it as well, but it really made an impact of the women of that generation.
One of the things that I get from the album, but I really, and Tom, you can tell me if you got it from the book, she mentions early in the book that she wanted to be able to discuss with her son that he should have hope, that he should be able to look at the world with hope. And I said to her today during turbulent times like this, I think people have a hard time maintaining hope. I do on a daily basis. And I said, I think it's something that really comes across in the book. How important was it to make sure it was there? Because these aren't positive, by and large, these aren't positive stories.
No.
She said it was essential.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. All right. You guys have both seen her live at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's amazing live.
I saw her last year at Metro with Material Reissue opening the show with Phil and Gotti doing the Jim Ellison vocals.
Yeah.
And they played
we
together.
We talked about that. We talked about that on the show.
They did Turning Japanese during the encore
together.
It was outstanding.
Yeah. That's great. No, she's a great live act as well. And, God, it's amazing to me that record is 26 years old.
Yeah.
Seriously, because I remember like yesterday.
And it's still crazy relevant.
No, absolutely.
Sadly.
Yeah, crazy relevant and still holds up, mm-hmm. like musically. And I just love her. She's one of my favorites.
It's nice to know I've always existed in a, I've never existed in a world without Exile and Guyville.
Yeah, he's this guy. He wants to make us feel like we're 95 years old.
Yeah, no, my birthday's next week. Thanks, Tom.
You're
I didn't need a reminder.
Happy birthday, big guy.
The 23rd.
Happy birthday, man.
Thanks.
How old are you going to be? You'd rather not say?
I don't want to answer that question.
Okay.
It's a big one, though.
All right. I think I'm turning 13.
That's right.
You can finally 21. Drink.
Exactly. Exactly. Times two.
So, by the way, Jim, so the Liz Phair stuff. When does the interview run? Do you have an interview that you're going to post?
It'll run at Forbes probably next week, I would guess. I'll have it turned around fairly quick, but not this week.
All right, cool. So it'll be run next week. An interview with Liz Phair about her book and her next album and all of that great stuff. And you can get that at Forbes, or you can go to Radio Jim Ryan and follow him there, where you got links to all of your stuff. So, you know, I follow you obviously on Facebook.
I'm sorry.
And I, you know, you post a lot of pictures. Like tonight you posted some pictures of Brian Grazer.
Yes.
And and his hair.
His hair on the giant screen behind
him.
Yeah.
So, but you did post the picture of you with one of the members of GWAR.
From Riot Fest.
You say always the highlight.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, you know, Tom went to Riot Fest.
Yes.
And, we haven't talked since Riot Fest, happened.
I don't think we did.
No, we haven't. We haven't. Because now he's like this guy, Tom's like the biggest Slayer fan on the planet now.
Oh, yeah?
Not now. I, listen.
But you came back nuts, you know, but Slayer was a transformative experience for you.
Yeah, are you kidding me? It was awesome. It was a career spanning, what, 2 hours? 2.5 hours? I don't know. Yeah. Time didn't exist anymore.
I don't think it was 2.5 hours, but, you know, you get into some of those Slayer songs that are six-minute opuses. And
yeah. I mean, I think Slayer's fine.
I love Slayer.
I don't go nuts over them. I still think one of the greatest album titles of all time is South of Heaven. I think that is one of my favorite album titles of all time.
So people are going crazy. This is supposedly the Slayer farewell tour, and people are going crazy with the merch. Tom, I think, bought 15 t-shirts.
Yeah. How many? What did you buy? I know you
a
hat.
I got the hat. Well, I already have. I have an old Slayer shirt from the 80s, from when my dad saw Slayer, and the arms are like cut off.
Uh huh.
So I'm doing okay on Slayer merch.
Okay.
But the story last week that came out was that they have sold so far in this farewell tour $10 million worth of merch.
That's absolutely
$10 million worth of Slayer t-shirts,
that
Nick.
That is absolutely insane.
You're going to be seeing Slayer t-shirts everywhere.
Wow.
Which is not a bad thing, really, in my world.
I've never owned a Slayer.
I have a Slayer t-shirt.
I've never owned any Slayer merch.
It's got a war helmet on the back of it, then, with like the giant Slayer logo and the... the anarchy symbol.
I'm trying to remember. I saw Slayer once, but they opened for somebody, and I can't remember. Was it Motorhead?
That sounds amazing.
I think it was Motorhead.
Possible, yeah.
I think it was Motorhead.
Please tell me that was at the Aragon.
It was at the Aragon. Slayer, and it was another band, too, and I can't remember who they were. It was right along on that same level,
okay,
you know, of intensity. the headliner was obviously... Motorhead was obviously the headliner. We'll be talking about Motorhead again a little bit later on.
Yes, we will. so excited.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
It's one of the only good things on that list.
Yeah. There's another one that I'm happy about that nobody else on the planet... Well, you're going to be happy about it.
I know exactly what that is.
Yeah. Right, first...
They'll win the fan vote, by the way.
There's no question about it. And by the way, first time that they were available or they were eligible... We'll talk about it later. First time they were eligible, they get the nominee.
That's what they call a tease right there. Stick around.
Hey, it worked for Pearl Jam. First time they were eligible, they not only got the nomination, they got inducted.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So. By the way, did you see, Tom, are you going to this? Did you see Slayer has one more area appearance coming up next month?
Yeah. It's out in, like, Moline?
It is out in Moline, but here's the lineup, okay?
Oh, this is in Moline.
This is in Moline.
It's in the Quad Cities, everybody.
Slayer.
Yeah.
Primus. Ministry. And Phil Anselmo from Pantera doing a Pantera set.
That's pretty crazy.
That's fantastic.
That's pretty crazy right there.
the fine people of Moline as they'll be there.
The only one, the only band of all of those that you mentioned that I've seen more than once. Is Primus. That's the only band that I've seen more than once. I saw them on their 3D tour a few years ago. You remember when they did the 3D tour? I love Primus.
No, I love Primus, too.
I think Primus is great. I think Les Claypool is a lunatic. And,
yes.
And so
is Al Jorgensen.
Yeah, well, Al Jorgensen's a whole nother...
That's why this tour is great.
Yeah.
So is Phil Anselmo. He's crazy, too.
Yeah, it's true. So it's the crazy tour.
Yeah.
They should just call it the crazy tour.
You know, they don't let that within the city limits.
Yeah.
You got to go to
the Quad Cities
for that.
In
Winnebago County.
You got to go to where Spike Odell worked in radio first. That's where you have to go.
By the way, the name of the venue where Slayer is performing at, the Tax Slayer Center.
Come on now.
You can't make
serious.
This stuff up.
Okay.
Slayer live at the Tax Slayer Center.
All right, I got to say, that's cool.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I got to say, that's pretty cool. All right, Jim, hang on. More thoughts on why do I keep calling it Pitchfork? Riot Fest.
Oh, I have lots
of... On the way back.
Sure.
On the way back? Yeah, so during the commercials, you and I will talk about it.
Then we'll come back and talk about
Motorhead.
We'll
come back and talk about something else. All right. Jim Ryan is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at jimryan.com. You can go to jimryan.com, radiojimryan.com. For more info for all his reviews, he writes for Forbes and other. But you still write for Daily Herald, right?
I do.
I am. And read for Daily Herald as well. So all of that and more. Keep up with him. We got lots more to talk about, including the the Bourbon Beyond Festival.
Yes,
that you went
Louisville.
To. Yeah, which
it's so good.
Incredible lineup.
It's awesome.
So, all right, we'll talk about that and more with music. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
I've been working all day, bumming my own side, running around like a blue-ass fly. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? We'll play those later on. Any request, any artist, any song, 312-981-7200. Know Your Onion is coming up. We're going to talk about the world of movie test screenings and limitedly available fast food items right here. And anything you want to jump in on, it's 312-981-7200. And Jim Ryan is with us. We talk music, entertainment. He writes for Forbes. He writes for the Daily Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan and go to RadioJimRyan.com, which is linked up on our Facebook page right now if people want to go to that. Jim and I were talking. Jim's a wrestling fan. So Jim and I were talking wrestling. So it's cool. Like, I have, like, there are three wrestling fans on the show. I don't know if that's ever happened.
On WGN, maybe.
Yeah, maybe not even on WGN.
Yeah.
That it's ever happened. Tom, he's not seen AEW yet.
I have all the DVR.
Oh, my God.
It's so good, man.
I'm going to plow through it this weekend.
When we were just talking off the air about the real life story.
Oh, this was...
About how Jericho lost the belt. Somebody stole Jericho's belt at an Outback steakhouse. Chris Jericho.
I love that. Like, just the idea of Jericho.
I picture him shirtless, yeah, sitting at the table,
ripping through like a really fatty 32 ounce steak or something.
Some blooming onions on the side.
Yes. With the makeup on and the whole thing. It's great stuff, man. It's great stuff. And it's only been on twice now. There's only been two episodes.
It has
outrated NXT.
I saw that.
By a lot.
I saw that.
Especially like in the demographic that they're shooting for.
And that's on Fox, right? NXT?
No, that's USA.
USA.
Now.
Okay. Yes. Raw. SmackDown
moved
Fox.
To Fox,
okay.
Which was the premiere was great.
The Rock was back?
Yeah.
Is that what I saw?
It was great.
Okay.
It was great. It was very, they pulled out all the stops. It was ridiculous.
I'll tell you what I can't wait for, speaking of NXT,
yeah,
in November here at Allstate Arena, is War Games.
Yeah.
I got my tickets to that because, yeah, A, I've never seen a cage match live. B, growing up, War Games, I thought was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. You mean the movie?
No, the double cage.
The double cage War, yeah, Games. Okay, I was going to say, well, you the movie?
No.
Get me to prison on the horn.
Get us Matthew Broderick?
Yeah, Matthew Broderick. Take us to DEFCON 4, get the president on the horn. That's my Barry Corbin imitation.
Oh, man.
Barry Corbin, I love him in that movie.
No, I was thinking more Precious Paul Ellering.
No, I gotcha. Yeah.
And J.J. Dillon getting, yeah, you know, clotheslined by the Road Warriors.
Well, but I'll tell you, man, you got some really solid wrestling action coming your way.
I'm very excited.
As I was telling you off the air, very little, what the hell is this storyline?
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of that in WWE.
USA,
yeah, there's a lot of that in WWE. I mean, there are great performers in WWE and some great matches, but, man, the storylines are like, okay. So there are very little really stupid storylines and just a lot of wrestling. I mean, the ending of the last episode was nothing but run-ins. It was like run-in after run-in after run-in after run-in. I'm not kidding. By the end
I'm
of
actually
it,
excited
by
to
the
watch
end
this
of it,
now.
There were 25 guys out
I haven't
out
been there. Excited to watch wrestling in years.
It was Jericho, you don't know what you've messed with, man. Because Jericho's the head heel.
Anytime someone has the good sense to make Jericho the head heel and give him a little freedom to talk a bit,
absolutely,
which he hasn't had in a couple years,
yeah,
I'm going to watch. I've interviewed Jericho. He's hilarious.
Yeah, no, I've interviewed him, too. He's fantastic.
He's awesome.
By the way, the news is next in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I will say this. You know, Jericho, they used him perfectly sometimes. They used him terribly other times.
Yeah.
They didn't work with him the way they should have worked with him sometimes. And I'm talking going back to WCW.
Oh, yeah.
His work with WWE. Well, the reason why he went to WWE is because WCW
didn't know what to do with him. But there was still funny stuff back
Ralphus.
Then. Ralphus, I was just going to say, was hilarious.
Ralphus was the king.
Yes.
But when he, you know, so when he first made his, you know, when they were teasing him to come to WWE.
I remember
the whole
this.
Y2J countdown.
Yes.
Brilliant.
That debuted at Allstate Arena.
Yes, it did.
And
I was there.
Him going back and forth with The Rock that night
was fantastic.
The Rock making fun of Juventud?
Exactly. Am I supposed to be impressed because last week you were wrestling down south with some jabroni named Juventud?
And Jericho's, I got his mask.
I took his mask. But Jericho, you know, and then they kind of blew that, like you know, like when he first came.
At first they did,
But then he came back and he had some really strong years and some strong months. I will say this, the whole storyline with You Just Made the List, whole bit with You Just Made the List, that's one of the more recent things that Jericho did on WWE.
That was
when he was best friends with Kevin Owens, and Kevin Owens turned on him.
I love Kevin Owens.
I do, too. I think he's great. And that whole thing...
This is the last time I almost watched wrestling, because you were telling me how good the Kevin Owens-Jericho thing was.
It was a phenomenal storyline, and it ended beautifully with the heel turn by Kevin Owens. And but the whole "you just made the list" thing, it was funny every single time he did it. And he would just walk around with a clipboard that said "the list" on the back of it. And whenever somebody pissed him off, he would just go, "You just made the list!" He would do a very dramatic thing. Do you remember that time? Did you watch that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was classic.
I saw somebody making the argument last week online that, that Jericho might be one of the, might be the greatest. They were calling him GOAT.
Well, no.
I don't think he's that, but
he's up there.
I think the resume he's put together now, especially with like launching AEW to where it's at.
Yeah.
You could, he's high on that list.
Oh, he is. He's high. If you're going to talk GOAT, you're talking Ric Flair. That,
yes.
That's it.
Agreed.
But he's up there. I mean, he's like in probably in my top 10 wrestlers of all time.
Oh, he might be higher. He might be in my top
five.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question that he would be in my top 10 easily, probably top five of all time. Always loved him. Always loved him. So anyway, you're gonna love it, man. I'm telling you.
Can't wait to watch it.
I'm telling you, it's back. Dean Ambrose is now John Moxley.
Okay, I saw that.
And he's killing it.
What name is Goldust going by?
Dustin Rhodes.
He's just going by Dustin Rhodes.
And he's not doing the Goldust makeup.
I saw. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
doing
the red jumpsuit.
Yeah. He's got like a red. Half of his face is made up, and the other half isn't. And it was. You got to watch it. I don't want to give anything away.
All right.
But there's a lot. The women's league is good. They got some strong competitors and some really good performers in there. It's good stuff, man. It's kind of like, you know how WWE, there are times when you watch it and you go, man.
I've happened to be in front of the TV the last several Mondays.
Yeah.
And I'll turn it on for about 10 minutes. And I can't make it more than like 15 minutes.
I know.
Like 3 weeks ago, I turned it on and it happened to be the first time they were doing this terrible angle with Maria Kanellis.
Oh, yeah.
Cuckolding somebody?
Yeah.
I was like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
This is terrible.
Yeah. Well, the big thing now, I guess, is Bray Wyatt and The Fiend.
Then they angered everybody last week with that.
Yeah.
At Hell in a Cell, right?
Right. Yes, they did. So, anyway. But anyway, it's AEW. I was watching it and genuinely on my couch, excited to be watching wrestling.
I can't wait to watch
And it doesn't happen very often when I turn on Raw or SmackDown.
No.
SmackDown was fun because it was the big premiere on Fox and they, you know, pulled out all the stops and everybody was there. So that was a lot of fun. But these AEW shows, that's the deal now. That's where you gotta be.
Is The Rock actually back for a run or was that a one time?
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, no. I mean, he comes back for WrestleMania and that's
right.
It. So, all right. All right. Hang on, Jim. We didn't even talk about any music in that segment. But we'll get your thoughts on
Motorhead.
On Motorhead. Well, we got that more on that to come. All right. We got a break here. The news is coming up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. It is a Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? And we're here till 5 a.m. Any artist, any song, anything, get those requests in. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Another round of Know Your Onion is coming up. You got to know the difference between a real headline and a headline from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. And these days, it's hard to tell them apart. So we've got that coming up. And we'll get two players to call in, play a solo round. Nobody goes home empty-handed. We're going to tell you about the world of movie test screenings. McRib is back, and everybody should rejoice. And then we're going to talk about some of the best limited-run fast food items. Right now, though, Jim Ryan is with us. He writes about music and entertainment for Forbes, the Daily Herald. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, so let's wrap up Riot Fest. So I want to get Tom in here, too, because Tom was there for a bunch of stuff. We've already covered the glory that is Slayer, evidently.
Yes. Hell yeah.
But now, what? Jim, you go ahead.
Rise Against. I thought Rise Against was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rise Against. I spoke with Tim McElrath, the singer, a little bit, and he spoke pretty passionately about why Riot Fest is such a great addition to Chicago, that they care about the park they're in, they make a real difference in the community. Year-round, they do all this stuff through their charitable arm that I doesn't get talked about a lot, which
right.
they're fine with. But I just, Riot Fest in general, I love. But Tim spoke a lot about that, and that's up in my Forbes coverage. What I loved was, on Sunday, I think the highlight for me was you had the B-52s doing their farewell performance into Patti Smith
oh,
into
yeah.
Bikini Kill.
Yeah.
And you don't get Bikini Kill without Patti Smith.
Right.
I just thought it was so... I thought that Sunday slate in particular was so well put together. Plus, the Village People were there.
Now, who, at this point, do we know if it's any Village People it's that have the, ever been?
No, so yeah, I actually looked this up because I thought the same thing. Because
I mean, because anybody can put on an Indian costume, you know what I mean?
I didn't recognize the singer, the cop,
right.
While I was standing there, so I looked it up. The original singer is back. The guy who wrote all these songs sued the band. I guess he got his copyrights, or he didn't sue the band, but he sued to get his copyrights back.
So the label or whatever, Casablanca.
Yeah, made. Because they go, the you can kind of try to start fighting to get that stuff back after, I think it's like 35 years.
Oh, man.
So he did. He got it back, and now he's back in the band somehow, too. I got to look up his name. I don't remember his name. But
I think his first name is Ron.
I thought it was like Vince.
Okay. Either way. Did you watch Gwar this year?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, and Tom, you saw Gwar.
I did watch Gwar.
Yeah,
and
that was your first time?
First time seeing Gwar. Like, I knew of Gwar because I used to watch Viva La Bam growing up, and they were on.
See, that kills me that's your reference point.
I'm sorry,
for Gwar. It's Viva La Bam.
Exposing a whole new generation to Gwar.
Oh my god,
amongst
that's
other
funny.
Things.
That's so funny.
But it was wild. The sacrifices were nuts.
It's fantastic.
Who did they kill? They killed
Trump.
They killed Trump. They killed Caitlyn Jenner.
Right.
There was a Caitlyn Jenner.
They killed Caitlyn Jenner.
They did.
They had a big robot fight.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild.
So it's par for the course then for Gwar.
Pretty much equal opportunity offenders as far as they're concerned.
Now, were you in the wet zone?
No, I did not want to get in the wet zone.
Okay.
I saw some of the people coming out of the wet zone and they were just like bug-eyed and like zombies, and they were who knows what was going through their head, but they were having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty hot that day too, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm just glad that the sound was actually good, because Friday, I don't know.
Ooh, there
if
was
you
some
noticed that Jim.
Violent Femmes. I couldn't even hear the Violent Femmes.
Couldn't hear them.
It was terrible. I walked up.
Oh, it's awful.
I was specifically covering the Violent Femmes too, like one the only band the whole weekend I had to catch. And I was standing what I felt was not a reasonably far distance from the stage and couldn't hear it.
That's
it was pretty brutal.
That's terrible.
It was brutal.
There were sound problems, I would say, throughout the entire Friday.
Well, who else did you see?
I saw Coxbar early on, and they sounded okay, but they were at one of the side stages, so it was a little bit more secluded. But even going up to like Flaming Lips, they managed to kind of figure it out.
Yeah,
it was much
better.
Yeah, it was much better, but not great. And I was just really surprised that you would think that they would have a handle on the sound. And by Saturday, it was fine. Everything sounded great. But all throughout Friday, multiple bands that I saw, I was just like, oh, I can't really hear them.
Mm-hmm.
When I usually get about as close as the sound stage, because I think that's close enough for me.
That should be close enough.
Yeah. All right.
Did you catch the name of the Gwar tour, by the way, Tom, that they're in the midst of, that Riot Fest fell during?
I did not.
Use Your Collusion. It's Gwar's Use Your Collusion tour. Which is, that's pretty great.
Gwar.
Yep.
Oh,
poking
Gwar.
A little fun at GNR, poking a little fun at, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, you know, as I've said a million times, even if you don't know what Gwar is,
mm-hmm.
you have an incomplete life if you've never seen them live. I'm serious. You have to, you as a human being, you have to at one point in your life see Gwar live. You have to.
In terms of all of the offensive things that are said and done on that stage, they're somehow grandfathered in to where we just kind of go, well, that's Gwar.
Yeah, no, that's exactly
okay
right. I mean, some of the stuff they do
can,
on stage,
can,
just,
it's
some of the
Gwar.
Most outrageously vulgar stuff that you'll ever see or hear anywhere, and yet you go, yeah, Gwar.
People were storming away from it, and my buddy Sean and I just looked at each other like... like
there were very upset.
Yeah. They were not in on the joke.
I wasn't sure what they were expecting, going to see a band dressed as giant space aliens, but hey, you know.
They're called hipsters, Tom.
Wow. So people were offended by Gwar?
Oh, we had people walking away from the stage.
What age range? Are we talking the young? Did they look like
early 20s, maybe?
No, come on.
Tom? Thoughts?
Yeah, I would say not far from my age.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah.
No.
You're in your 20s and you get offended by Gwar?
By Gwar.
What the hell is going on in this world?
It made me rethink when people complained about the PC culture. I was like, wait, maybe I do need to rethink this.
Oh, man.
If people are offended by Guar,
it's Guar, I'm confused. Man.
It's so obviously over the top.
Yeah.
It's theater. You're watching theater.
They're theater geeks. That's their background. They're theater geeks. They were high school theater, college theater. They're theater geeks.
Yeah. And
their background is not music. You can kind of tell.
And there's some satire in there.
Of course there is.
Which I always appreciate.
Oh, man.
I bet they think wrestling is real, too. Yeah. You know?
I don't understand that at all. I don't get that at all, man.
Yeah. No, that was the thing.
I mean, look. Guar loads their stuff up with, like, I mean, it's a different kind of over the top.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's on a whole different level of over the top.
It's a spectacle.
It is. And it's like, if you can't look at this and go, oh my God, this is ridiculous, or look at it and go, oh man, I've never been so offended, there's something wrong. I'm sorry.
No, I'm with you.
Oh man. All right. So Riot Fest, good?
It was good.
Overall, good?
Best festival I've been to in a while, probably since I went to Pitchfork to see LCD Sound System.
Okay.
They keep it affordable. I mean, there's not a lot to dislike about Riot Fest.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, since we're talking about festivals, tell everybody about the Bourbon Beyond Festival, where it is, how long it's been around, and all that cool stuff, because you speak very, very highly of it. And, you know, we've talked about this fest in particular in the past, and the lineups are amazing.
Yeah.
Despite the rain. The lineups are...
We got no rain this year.
Okay.
It was 90 and it was 90 and sunny every day. Okay. I had heat stroke by the second day. It was great.
Yeah.
But no, it's in Louisville, Kentucky. They moved it to a new location this year. Last year it was along the river, which didn't help with the flooding during the rains. But so it's at the festival grounds this year, which... an amazing lineup, though, and a focus on bourbon. This is, you know, the festivals now... It's such a crowded sphere in America for the festivals, you know, during the summer and fall months that festivals, in an effort to try to push the model forward and evolve and get past these stale lineups that are the same throughout the country. You have bands now that just do a U.S. tour and only play festivals.
That's a common thing.
Yeah, which it takes out that why would you travel to, you know, Coachella from Chicago if there's six of the same artists playing here at Lollapalooza? It's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
So a lot of these festivals try to add a unique component now, aside from the music, to draw people in and provide a unique experience. At this particular festival, that component is bourbon and food.
Mm-hmm.
So they celebrate Kentucky's famed bourbon trail. It's the only festival. Here's all the people I spoke to. And this is all in my Forbes coverage.
Okay.
I had the vice president of Louisville Slugger, the co-founder of Angels Envy Bourbon. I had a celebrity chef in Zach Brown Band's Chef Rusty. Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips. I mean, it really runs the gamut of Ed Kowalczyk from Live I spoke with, the Zach Brown Band I spoke with, Hall & Oates I had going as a preview for the festival.
Right.
And then the Foo Fighters were the big headliner for the weekend.
Right.
Which, how can you really go wrong with that?
So you had John Fogerty, Foo Fighters, and Joan Jett in one day.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, that lineup was stacked all 3 days. That was Friday night. It was Foo Fighters, Fogerty, Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, The Flaming Lips Live, Joan Jett, Lucas Nelson, The Record Company, Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Oh, man. All right. Well,
Preservation Hall Jazz Band was on at like noon.
Yeah. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on a second. We want to talk more about the Bourbon Beyond Fest. We also have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees to talk about for 2020. And then, of course, we'll play a round of Rock of Ages music trivia. Do I have to do an imitation of Stephen Wright now?
It would be nice.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And Jim Ryan is with us. Writes about music and entertainment for Forbes and the Daily Herald. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. We were talking about the Beyond Bourbon Fest for 2019. Day one, John Fogerty, Foo Fighters, Joan Jett, and more. Day two, Hall & Oates, Plant & Kraus, and Squeeze. Man, that's another massive, massive lineup.
Now, have you ever heard Dave Grohl talk about how he treats festivals?
No.
I've seen an interview with him where, like, they performed Friday night, but then I don't think they had their next gig until Sunday in Nashville, so they had time to play with. And I've seen him talk about his strategy at festivals being to just walk around backstage with a bottle of whiskey and start knocking on trailer doors to see who he gets. Like, hey, I'm here with this bottle. You wanna have a drink?
Wow.
And so, like, this is how he meets all these bizarre people and winds up jamming with them a lot of times at festivals. So at Bourbon and Beyond, it was like 2 in the afternoon, and we noticed Grohl was up on stage with Squeeze. He played drums on Black Coffee in Bed.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I think Black Coffee in Bed and Tempted, I think both.
That's hilarious. Uh-huh. Wow, that's
great. So
that's
just what he does. So I love the fact that they had already performed the night before.
Yeah.
And he stuck around and was just hanging out at 2 in the afternoon the next day.
With a bottle of bourbon.
Probably.
Or a bottle. Well, yeah, they were in bourbon country. So
chances are.
Yeah.
But yeah, he jammed with Squeeze. It was great.
And what about Hall & Oates?
I love Hall & Oates, first of all.
Yes. We proclaimed our love for Hall & Oates pretty much a lot last time you were on.
But I missed their longtime guitar player. Do you remember who their longtime guitar player was?
Was it, what's his name, G.E. Smith?
It was G.E. Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. I miss G.E. Smith. But they still have their saxophone player of like 40-something years, Charlie DeShant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he was there. But it was great. They do the hits.
Yeah.
Daryl in particular has been pretty outspoken about the fact that there's not going to be new Hall & Oates music.
Right.
Although they did do a new track, I think 2 years ago with Train.
Mm-hmm.
Meh. But no, they were good. They were fantastic. I mean, that was another one. That elsewhere on that slate for Saturday was Trey Anastasio, Alison Krauss, Grace Potter, Jenny Lewis. It was a pretty stacked lineup throughout the weekend.
Yeah. And then finally on day three, Zac Brown Band and ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Still going, ZZ Top.
I can
50 years, right?
50 years.
Yeah.
Same three guys, same three chords, as Billy Gibbons so eloquently describes it.
Oh, man. So, but ZZ Top is fun. I remember years and years and years. I mean, well, they've been around for 50 years, but my mentor, the great Roy Leonard, one of the greatest broadcasters in the history of this business, Roy and Sheila, they had 6 sons, and so, like, you know, in the range, you know, ranging in age from, you know, like every age range, it was like every few years they had another son.
Okay.
And they had all boys, and all of their names begin with the letter K, and I don't know why I'm bringing those details up. But he took a few of his kids to see ZZ Top when they actually played the Auditorium Theater.
That's an amazing venue for that,
too. And this was in the late 70s, probably.
Okay.
And they had live Steer on stage throughout the whole show.
You've told me this story. I love this.
Yeah. Live Steer out on the stage. And not unlike when Nugent rode out on a buffalo at House of Blues.
At House of Blues, is that even necessary?
No.
When the biggest venue you can fill is the House of Blues?
He rides out on a buffalo. I've told you this story, right?
I don't think I've heard this one.
Oh, no, you don't know
this one?
I've
heard the Steer.
Okay, so no, but ZZ Top, they were known for that. They would tour with Steer and bring Steer out on stage.
I just picture these animals defecating off to the side of the stage mid-show, and it's stinking to high hell.
But here's the thing about the buffalo.
Okay,
so Nugent comes out. I didn't see this. My friend Scott Oaken did. Went to the House of Blues. We all know how big the House of Blues
right.
is, okay?
It's not a
place where you should bring a buffalo.
Right.
It's not, okay. So Nugent comes out on riding a buffalo, going, yeah! Screaming. And there's the buffalo, and the buffalo looks miserable because the buffalo's like, why am I here? Why aren't I in a prairie somewhere? Why am I in the House
why
of
am
Blues?
I being ridden by this idiot.
Yeah, exactly. So he's on there, yeah! Screaming. And the buffalo's out there, and then, you know, Nugent jumps off the buffalo and, like, shoots a flaming arrow.
I was just going to say he shot
a flaming arrow through a guitar. And then the buffalo's up there, and he's like, and he gets up to the mic, and he goes, I bet you didn't think I was going to come out on an effing buffalo! Do you like the buffalo? People are going
and
nuts.
Of course, these idiots are,
they go nuts. So somebody leads the buffalo off. The buffalo does what you just said you thought it would do. On this, there's a dude with a mop. Comes
Who's
out.
Who's ready for this?
Exactly.
This must happen every night.
They had mop duty for the thing. So, no pun intended. So they bring the buffalo off stage. Okay, so the buffalo's gone. All right, so the show continues. He starts screaming about how the mayor was, it was Richard J. Daley was the mayor at the time.
Okay.
And so he starts screaming about, your effing mayor didn't want me to bring my effing machine gun turrets, but I did. And they were mounted on top of the Marshall stacks, and he went up on top of the Marshall stacks and fired blanks from the machine gun.
God.
I bring my machine gun turrets. Screw your mayor.
You don't do that anymore post Bataclan.
No. This is the early 2000s probably.
Oh my God.
So then their encore comes out and he rides the buffalo back out on stage. And so the first thing when Oaken is telling me this, the first thing I'm thinking is, so what did they, I've been backstage in House of Blues.
Yeah, where do they keep the buffalo?
Where was the buffalo?
Right.
And I just picked, because he only played...
Well, backstage at House of Blues is upstairs.
There's nothing backstage.
Right.
There's, like, nothing back there. And something, where the hell did they put this buffalo?
I'm picturing them trying to push it up the stairs.
They bring it out on State Street or something?
Oh, my God.
So he comes out on the buffalo, and then the show ends, and he rides the buffalo off, and then they're done. He did this song on top of the buffalo. But the buffalo was doing exactly what you said it was. But, of course, my takeaway was, I feel just terrible for this buffalo.
For the buffalo, yeah.
Because the buffalo's backstage, like, what am I doing here?
There's
drunks back there bumping into it, probably. And,
can we get PETA involved for this poor buffalo?
Save
the buffalo.
Yeah, save the buffalo from Nugent.
When I saw Ted opening for Kiss at Allstate Arena, he shot the flaming bow and arrow after a long, rambling diatribe about speaking the English language.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Nugent. All right, let's take a break, shall we?
Okay.
All right, we got a break for the news, and then after the news, we are going to jump into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What? What were you going to say?
He thinks he should be in, by the way. He's been lobbying hard.
Oh, God. No. All right, let's take a break. Kim and Priest. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about the world of movie test screenings coming up. We got a round of Know Your Onion, but right now we're continuing with our talk with Jim Ryan, who joins us once a month. He writes about entertainment and music at Forbes and the Daily Herald, and you can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan and go to RadioJimRyan.com, which is linked up on our Facebook page. Jim, welcome back.
Howdy.
We are going to play a round of Rock of Ages.
Yeah, I'm hoping mine goes better than last time. It was embarrassing last
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you had a rough go of it last time.
Not great.
Yeah, you had a rough go of it. But we ask each other questions, Tom, Jim, and I, and they are in different selected categories from this trivia game called Rock of Ages, and we'll do that in a little bit. But we have to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations, and we do this every year. The conversation is kind of similar every year, but we did get a text here. 815 area code says, hey, Nick, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top had one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard in my life a couple of years ago. Someone asked him about the 80s, and he smiled and said, hey, you know that Talking Heads video, Burning Down the House? At the end, it's his face on the road with two lines going up his nose. That was us. I should have done the Texas accent. They said, I laughed so hard I cried.
Billy Gibbons is hilarious.
Yeah.
He's one of my all-time favorite interviews just because he can speak knowledgeably about everything involving music. And he's hilarious.
And he does talk about the burrito.
Yes,
the
he
burrito
does.
House. So, all right. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay.
I have some quotes here from Ted Nugent regarding...
Wait a minute. You dug up some quotes of Ted Nugent talking about how he should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Was he on a buffalo when they interviewed him?
Presumably.
All right.
He says it's sacrilege.
Oh, God.
He starts there and then goes on to say, and I quote, this is Ted Nugent, it's ultimately disrespectful and cruel to Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, and Little Richard, and all the founding fathers in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame means something.
Are you kidding me?
This is what he said. Abandon egos, bragging, and Ted Nugent speaking on behalf of Ted Nugent. Is it or is it not vulgar, dishonest, and obscene that Grandmaster Flash, Patti Smith, and ABBA are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but Ted effing Nugent isn't? Referring to himself with... an expletive in the third person.
Yeah.
So that's Ted Nugent talking about...
He really thinks that Patti Smith shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Does he really think that?
It's one of his arguments.
And Grandmaster Flash shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? ABBA, not a fan, but Grandmaster Flash, really?
By the way, one person on Twitter called him out on this,
yeah,
and it was David Crosby.
Now, see, there's an argument I'd like to see. I would like to see Ted Nugent and David Crosby in a ring. What did he say?
Unfortunately, it didn't turn into a back and forth, but Crosby's reply was, this is really funny stuff. He's not good enough, and he never will be. He's a hack player and no singer at all. Could not write a decent song if his life depended on it.
Whoa.
Well, hold on. Has he ever heard Cat Scratch Fever?
Whoa.
Wango Tango?
Wow. Is it Wango Zitango? You know, my friend Scott, who witnessed the Buffalo incident at the House of Blues, you know what his entrance song was when he got married, when he and his wife got married,
okay,
and they entered at the reception? It was the beginning of Stranglehold on a loop.
Just that.
We all came in because I was in the wedding party, and there was a whole bunch of us wedding party. As soon as the beginning of Stranglehold was on a loop, and it would play over and over and over and over and over again. And when they came in, the vocals started. That was the cue. When the lovely couple, the bride and groom, came in. Here, this is what we did over and over. This was playing. And now, couple number one. I can't remember anybody's name. So here's Nick and Janet. Yeah, give it up. That's playing. And this goes on. They looped it. I don't know how long they looped it, but it was a big wedding party.
I think if you loop it, it would be 15 minutes long.
Because it's already really long.
Yeah.
Because come on again now, baby. Doesn't start till about three minutes into the song.
There was no Buffalo at this ceremony?
No Buffalo.
Unfortunately, no livestock.
You would think the married couple would come in on a Buffalo.
It would be nice, yeah.
But yeah, I just remember that was on a loop.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the first... When I got married the second time, we did Chelsea Dagger.
Okay.
Because my ex-wife, sure, and I, and that, you know, the whole side of her family, ridiculous hockey fans from Michigan.
Enough said.
Yeah, but not Red Wings fans. Hawks fans. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, so we did that. I'm trying to remember. We did a big jam. Oh, we did Sweet Emotion.
Nice.
When I got married, we did Sweet Emotion, and we looped it, too. So that we could do the whole beginning, and then when the sweet came, that was us.
Okay.
So, I think we stole the idea from Scott, because he got married about 7 months before I did. That was that time when all of my friends were getting married, and I was like,
right,
yeah, okay, I guess I got to do this. Because everybody around, I'm not kidding, between 1995 and 1998... probably 10 weddings, and we were all like late 20s, early 30s when we got married.
I think I finally just escaped that part of my life.
I think it happens to everybody, honestly.
It does.
It's going to hit town, it's going to happen to you.
Yeah, but I'm planning on it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't feel, trust me, everybody around me getting married too, and I told them, please stop.
Yeah.
You're ruining my life, because I've been with my girlfriend almost 7 years now, 7 years this November.
Yeah, that reflects on you.
No, yeah, absolutely.
She was telling me about it today. She's like, hey, saw Natalie and Tyler got engaged today. I was like, they did. That's great for them.
It is crazy if you have a tight group of friends. And for a long time, you know, I was tight with these guys. And there were like 10 of us,
right,
you know? And then you get to know their girlfriends, and then more people are involved,
right,
and then you know those people, and those people know people. And I'm not kidding. The first time I got married, it was September of 1996. Out of the group of friends I hung out with, there were 5 weddings that year.
No, I believe it. That's because, yeah, we all get to that point.
Oh, yeah. And I was 31, so I'm thinking, well, I'm 31, I guess I should be married.
I'm getting to the second wedding point now.
Yeah. Well, no, that happened too.
The sequel
that happened too. A few of us had sequels. So, all right, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Nugent not on the nominee
Thank
list this
God.
Year.
Thank
oh my God.
God,
what a crime!
All right. Scene.
All right. Well, first we have to tackle the elephant in the room. That I never make an elephant. I just make it a point every single time. No Warren Zevon again. I can't comprehend how, one, he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame already. Two, has never been nominated. Warren Zevon has never been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It is an unbelievable crime.
Is this one of those things where he's angered, or did he anger the media back then or something? Like, is he the
He was a nonconformist. There's no question about that if you just look at his work.
But those are the guys that aren't going to get voted in.
But man, look at his work. And you know what? He's dead too. And even
Right.
And people who are it's easier to get voted in posthumously. You know what I mean? Like it takes people to, like, it took Ron Santo to die before the Baseball Hall of Fame put him in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's one of the criteria is, you know, oh wait, are they still alive? Well, then we can still wait.
Out of curiosity, do either of you know off the top of your head if either Captain Beefheart or Frank Zappa are in?
Zappa's in.
Zappa's definitely in.
Think Zappa's in?
I think Zappa's in.
Not positive.
No. Well, listen, anytime we throw these names about, this happens every year. We start throwing names about, and then we find out, no, they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'm like,
I never want to assume when it comes to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's true. Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is ultimately, it's aggravating. And stupid, and so it makes me nuts. So this is why we talk about it all the time. But I just got to get the Zevon out there. It's ridiculous that Warren Zevon has never been nominated, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Def Leppard, Bon Jovi, I just wanted to bring that up.
As I always point out, Tico Torres is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer,
right? And Warren Zevon isn't.
Zappa's in.
Yeah, Beefheart is in.
I'm looking right now.
All right, we're doing some research here.
Doesn't look like Captain Beefheart's in.
No, okay. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Trout Mask Replica was not exactly a number one selling album.
No, it wasn't. And it freaked out Vic Vaughn. So, all right, let's go through the nominees. Let's start with the first timers. These are first timers. I can tell you which ones I'm really happy about. First time nominee, Pat Benatar. And this is long overdue as far as I'm concerned.
I like Pat Benatar, and yeah.
It's long overdue. I love Pat Benatar. I think she's great, and it's nice to see that she's finally getting recognition that she deserves. And I'd actually like to see her get in.
I'd be fine with Pat Benatar getting in.
I think she's awesome. I think she's great. Always has been. You go back to that stretch from like 1979 to around 1986. Fantastic, especially the early '80s stuff, especially like Precious Time and songs like Hell Is for Children and.
Well, and then the influence is there. This is something I always come back to on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like that, you know, is there an influence on what came after it? And
absolutely.
Whether you like it or not, there is an influence there from Pat Benatar.
Okay, first year eligible.
I already know what you're going to say.
Don't.
Dave is nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Dave Matthews Band, nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, I couldn't be happier.
We need more jam bands in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Hold on.
I was kidding.
I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be happier that Dave is nominated.
Okay, but are there jam bands that should be in before Dave?
No.
Really? Come on, really? You don't have to like them.
Is Grateful Dead in?
Again, like I would assume
I would guess
that they are.
The Grateful Dead are in, right?
I would assume they are, but again, I don't want to assume.
They are.
Yeah, okay.
They got in in 1994.
Is Fish in?
No.
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
That which is to me, again, I'm not even
what about
a Fish fan.
Is Mo still a thing?
Yeah. I don't know. Pearl Jam's in.
So this is interesting to me when you go through the 90s bands that are in and the ones that aren't.
Yeah.
Like Nine Inch Nails is still on this list.
Yes.
Smashing Pumpkins have never even been nominated.
What, really?
Yeah.
He's
another one. You know, he rubbed the media the wrong way.
I'm not a fan of Smashing Pumpkins, but that seems to be wrong.
I think it's hard to ignore the impact of their 90s run.
There's no question about it. I just don't like it. But there's no question about it that they deserve to be considered nominated or at least inducted. There's no question about it. So I'm happy about Dave. I don't think they're going to get in.
I wouldn't be shocked if they win that fan vote.
Yeah, that's
mobilizing that army of fans.
That's true.
If you can get them.
Hell, I'm voting for them.
If you can get them to pick up your phone.
All right.
Don't rule that one out.
Probably just like the state of Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Big Dave fans out there.
Depeche Mode again.
That'd be fine.
I love Depeche Mode.
Yeah,
I think they're great.
I have no problem with that.
First timers, the Doobie Brothers.
First timers. That's amazing to me that it's first timers.
That's really weird that they're the first timers.
I'm not surprised they're not in. I'm surprised it's only the first time.
And it's too bad that the guy, Fred Berry, who played Rerun, can't, on Different Strokes, can't induct them.
Wow. I wasn't expecting a Fred Berry reference.
Which Doobie you be? Which Doobie you be?
Is he from Harvey? Fred Berry?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
Is he? All I know is that that's one of the weirdest television episodes of all time, is the is the What's Happening bootleg, the Doobie Brothers. You know this episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's classic. Oh, yeah.
Which right. Doobie Doobie in?
Which Doobie Doobie? Whitney Houston, surprised that she has not been considered before.
I mean, she... This, again, goes to that age-old argument, what do you want in your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
If you don't mind pop music being in, which I don't, then Whitney Houston should be in, especially if Janet Jackson is already in.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
I don't have a problem with Janet Jackson being in. I have a problem with Whitney Houston not being in.
Yeah. And again, this is like a great opportunity. Again, she's dead.
Yeah.
So, and this is her first time.
And it brings Bobby Brown out for public appearances, which I'm always an advocate for that.
Okay, hang on.
That's his prerogative.
Come on, man. What? All right. He drank his Henny Youngman juice
that
earlier.
That was low-lying fruit.
Yes, it was. All right. Don't put that past him. See how tall he is? Low-lying fruit? Man, it's easy for him. All right. All right, Pat Benatar, Dave Matthews Band, Depeche Mode, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston so far. We got more to talk about and more to bitch about here on WGN, and we'll do it right after this. Tom, where was this recorded? I might have it at home.
Got like 80 bootlegs, man.
I'm not kidding. I don't have as many now. I have a few.
You downsized your bootleg collection, or
well,
what?
My bootleg collection is the CDs. You know,
sure.
Back in the mid '90s to the early 2000s, and I'm not kidding when I say, I have stacks of them. I have stacks of Dave concerts.
I have some mid '90s Dave performance from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival.
So I did
pony up for a Dave bootleg.
Yeah. It's absurd the amount of Dave bootlegs.
How many do you have a lot of Pearl Jam bootlegs?
Not nearly as many as the Dave.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, I knew a guy who could get them. And he knew a guy who could get them, and I didn't pay for them.
That's even better, because they were a little those prices got a little outrageous.
They
back
did,
then.
But I have enormous amounts of them.
If you wanted soundboard quality, you were paying.
Yeah, I didn't pay for any of them. I still think one of my favorite live albums, and this is a legit one that was actually released, because he's released a lot of live albums.
Yeah, Red Rocks or
Red Rocks is great.
Luther College. That's great.
Tim and Tim. I opening up with One Sweet World, that version of One Sweet World.
Did you go when they did the Dave Matthews Caravan way down on the south side?
Yes.
That festival. That was a wonderful festival, first off.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I got to see Dave and Tim do a set together.
It's so good. Luther College might be my favorite of, I mean, I know it's not a band.
Right.
It's not the band, but it might be my favorite Dave-related thing. Is Luther College.
That's
I can't
quite good.
Tell you how many times I listened to that. So, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Rock and Roll Hall Fame nominations continue. Pat Benatar, Dave Matthews Band, Depeche Mode, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Judas Priest.
Now we're getting to the good stuff.
Now, they've been nominated before.
They have.
If you're going to acknowledge metal in any kind of way, this band should have already been put in.
It's stunning to me how little metal is in, and they should be in. We'll get to another one on this list that should be in, and it's frightening that Iron Maiden's never.
Yeah,
although
I agree.
Bruce Dickinson has been on the record saying many times he doesn't want any part of it. So
right, that helps.
Yeah,
Kraftwerk again
should
has
be
made
in.
The list. I agree, should be in. MC5, one of the most influential
punk. Yeah.
Yeah. Second bunch of times they've been in nominated, and now the first time I can't believe
this is only the first time.
Motorhead.
This is the first time.
First time.
I didn't realize it was the first time. And another example of someone who has to die before they nominate them.
That's absurd. That
That's
Motorhead
insane.
Has never been nominated before. That's absurd.
I assumed they had been nominated at the very least.
Nine Inch Nails. They've been nominated before, but not in. Notorious B.I.G. Never been nominated.
That's fine with me.
Yep. Rufus featuring Chaka Khan nominated again. Chaka Khan in on her own?
I was going to say that was my next question, yeah.
I don't know if she's in with Rufus or is she just by herself. All right, now here's one that, again, I think is almost Warren Zevon level. Todd Rundgren.
People who love pop music.
How is he not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Not just because of Utopia and his solo music and the music that he writes and performs, his production?
Right.
I mean, he's one of the best producers, you know. I don't know.
Bang and gong.
Yeah. Oh. Soundgarden, never been nominated. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam just got in.
Mm-hmm. But another one who has to die, then they go, yeah. We got
a couple more dead people here. One, actually. Is Mark Bolan, is he dead?
I don't know if Mark Bolan's dead.
I think Mark Bolan is definitely dead.
Okay, T-Rex, never been nominated. And Mark Bolan is dead. Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, man, he died in
confirmed.
1977.
He died very young. Thin Lizzy.
There's nobody left from that, is there? Gary Moore passed away.
Gary Moore passed away. Well, of course, obviously,
Phil's long gone. Thin Lizzy's amazing.
This is another crime.
Yeah, I agree.
They've never been nominated. Thin Lizzy has never been nominated to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's a crime.
Apparently, that's the theme then this year, is trying to right some of the wrongs, maybe.
Yeah, except Warren Zevon's not on the list, which is the biggest wrong.
But then, I mean, like, again, we're going to laugh when we see who gets in and who doesn't.
Yeah.
Because they gear this whole thing now around the TV broadcast, around the HBO broadcast of the ceremony.
Right.
So they're going to want Nine Inch Nails. They're going to want Dave Matthews Band. They're going to want Depeche Mode, which is nothing. It's not a slight against any of those artists.
Right.
It's just there's a hell of a lot of artists who should be in first.
Here's Glenn real quick on WGN. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right, what's up?
I was listening to one of the other stations, and they put out the argument as, why can't there be more than one Hall of Fame? I mean, you have a country western Hall of Fame. Some of the people that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't see them as rock and rollers, but they do deserve their own category.
Yeah. Well, as far as I know, there are other genre Hall of Fames.
Right. There's a Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Rock and roll just isn't just the one.
Well, the problem is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now has become your de facto music Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
It really just has the wrong name is what it is.
Yeah.
It just should be called the Music,
like the music
Hall of Fame. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Glenn, thanks for the call. All right. So who do you think, who do you think is going to induct if any of these people get in? Like, who's going to induct Dave?
Jimmy Fallon. By doing an impression the whole time. Ooh. Ooh. That's what I'd like to see anyway.
I'd say probably some guy in a drug rug.
Yeah.
You know?
Stinking of patchouli, yeah.
I saw Dave.
Guy from my senior study hall.
At one show, it was back at the big break, when Crash, like, really hit. And I was there, and I was by myself. I was with people, but I decided I was going to get my own ticket because I wanted to be as close to the stage as possible. So I was in like the third row, but people kept coming down, you know, drunk and stuff. And this guy comes next to me. He's standing next to me and I'm drinking. I got a beer and there's basically just backwash left in the bottom. He comes up. He's got the puka shells and the whole thing. And he's like, hey, he's like 24. He goes, hey, can I get a slurp?
Sure can.
Yeah. That sums up some of the encounters that I've had. Dude just comes up, standing in the third row. I was on the end. They had fantastic seats. I was on the end. Hey, man, can I get a slurp? Yeah. No, you can't.
At Alpine?
Yeah, you can take me. You could. No, this was at Poplar Creek.
This was Poplar Creek. At Alpine this summer, they were selling.
I got to take a break. Hold on. We'll continue this in a second because we got to get to the news, which is coming up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? Any artist, any song, anything, we'll get to that in a little bit. 312-981-7200. So, Jim Ryan's here. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
We discussed a whole bunch of stuff, including the Bourbon Beyond recap and Riot Fest and Liz Phair.
Ted Nugent,
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. All the coverage that we were talking about that you did, people can check out online. The website is RadioJimRyan.com.
And on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Yep.
Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Writing for Forbes and for the Daily Herald.
You got it.
All right. So every time Jim comes in, we play a little trivia.
Yes.
And it used to be a thing called Music IQ.
I was better at that.
We ran out of cards. So now we're doing Rock of Ages.
Yes.
And it's between Tom and Jim and myself. And I read the question to Jim. Jim reads his question to Tom. Tom reads his question to me. And then whoever has the most correct at the end of two rounds, we do two rounds of four questions each. At the end of two rounds, whoever has the most gets a Buick Skylark and zombie. You know what? Zombie Lemmy will in honor of the nomination.
My 2003 Honda died this week, so I will take the Buick Skylark.
Wow!
And we need up my game.
Wow. 2003.
206,000 miles
on
it.
Good for you, man.
Finally went.
Wow. All right. So are we ready to play?
Yes.
There are four different categories here. There's 50s and 60s. There's 70s and 80s, 90s, 2000s, and B or E, which is Beatles or Elvis.
All right.
So that's your question. So I'll start out. Are you ready?
I am.
For 50s, 60s.
Yes.
Jim, what was the name disc jockey Robert Smith? What is the name disc jockey Robert Smith known by?
Live fast, die young, and make a good looking corpse. What's his name? In Cleveland. Oh my God, I can't think of his name. Oh. Do I have it?
No.
Oh, never mind them. Who is it?
Wolfman Jack.
Oh, geez. Okay.
You were thinking of...
I'm thinking of...
Freed.
Alan Freed. Alan Thank Freed. You. That's what I was thinking.
Wolfman Jack.
Wolfman Jack makes much more sense,
yeah,
actually.
Because Wolfman Jack doesn't sound like a real name,
no.
And Alan Freed does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Tom, it's time for Tom's question.
Tom, what 1973 movie secured the licensing rights to 39 oldies tunes, the most ever at the time?
1973 movie?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the last time, one of the times we did this, every damn question that he had was movie related.
I know.
He all said, right. how many
but
songs?
I like that he's confused by it. 39 oldies tunes, the most ever at the time, secured the licensing rights to those 39 songs.
1970, American Graffiti?
It is American
okay.
Graffiti.
Okay. And you know who narrates that movie and is in it? Wolfman Jack.
Yes, he is.
All right, so Tom's got one.
Well, let me wipe the sweat off of my
all
brow.
All right. I would have killed you if you didn't get that.
Yeah, I had to take a second.
Yeah.
I had to take a second.
All right.
All right, 50s, 60s. West Hollywood's Whiskey A Go Go spawned what type of worldwide female phenomena?
My guess would be groupie.
That is incorrect.
What is it?
Go Go dancers or
go
go
girls.
Dancers.
All right. Okay. It's only in the name of the bar.
Right, yeah.
All right. Tom got the only in round one. Tom got the only one right because it was an American
it was a
real graffiti
brain
question.
Buster. Yeah.
All right. 70s, 80s. Are you ready?
I am.
Now I'm going to tell you. If you don't get this, I'm going to throw you out the damn window. All right. You ready?
It's a long way down, but go ahead.
What is the answer to "Are We Not Men"?
We are Devo.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
And you would have been it would have been justified for me to throw you out the window.
Okay. It would have.
Are they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, but they should be.
They also should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Would the Hats get their own award?
Yeah.
I think that's probably in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The hat from the Whip It video, yeah.
Okay. In Cleveland, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
Got some goofy stuff in that place. Okay.
Tom, another brain buster for you here. How many miles must one drive to get to the B-52's Love Shack?
Wow, I'm blanking on it.
Are you? Uh-huh. Okay, this one I had, actually.
Oh, man.
It's at the very end.
Yeah, no, I know. I just can't think of the...
Oh, God, it's right close.
Did you see them at Riot Fest, too?
I didn't, because I wasn't there Sunday.
Oh, just went Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay.
50 miles.
You're close there. I thought you had it for a sec. 15 miles.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
15 is the correct answer. 15 miles to the Love Shack.
That's right.
Tin roof.
Rusted. There's a monster in my pants, and he does a naughty dance.
Okay.
Fred Schneider solo.
I love them, but they should be in.
Yeah. I love the B-52s as well.
For the beehives alone.
All right.
All right, 70s, 80s. Oh, God.
What?
It's a total gimme. This original punk release was entitled Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the...
Wow, Sex really? Pistols. Okay, yeah. I was going to say, I'm like... Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just thought that was... You were joking.
No, that's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Boy, these questions are inconsistently easy or tough.
I like that. It was a little uneven.
All right, so we're all tied.
Wow.
We all got one apiece.
Wow.
This is quite stunning. All right, are you ready?
I am.
90s, 2000. What fellow rapper did Snoop Dogg refer... By the way, typo on here. It's spelled with one G.
Oh, come on. D-O-double-G. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. What fellow rapper did Snoop Dogg refer to as the Great White American Hope?
I'm guessing it's Eminem?
Yeah. Yeah.
That just seemed too obvious.
Yeah. As did the last three questions. All right, go ahead.
All right, Tom, what 1997 tribute recording replaced Bing Crosby's White Christmas as the best-selling single of all time? 1997.
Tribute?
Tribute recording, which replaced Bing Crosby's White Christmas as the best-selling single of all time. Were you born? When were you born? Were you born? You were not born in 1997?
Four.
Okay.
He was four.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm not sure if I would have gotten this one.
I have a guess.
I was going to say, when I tell you, you'll go, yeah.
Is it We Are the World, but they did it again?
That was prior to 1997, first of all.
I know, but I wasn't sure if they recorded again.
No.
Was it Mariah Carey?
No. So everyone's thinking Christmas. Don't think Christmas. Okay. 1997 tribute recording, which just happens to replace a Christmas song.
Okay. Candle in the Wind?
It is Candle in the Wind.
All right.
Oh, because he did it for Princess Di.
I got thrown by the Christmas reference. That's
flipped
what I got.
It over and looked and thought to myself, it's Mariah Carey, and then we all did the same thing.
Okay. All right. It's all right. I've been phlegming up all day, so.
That happens.
All right. 90s, 2000s. Oh, jeez.
What?
This is another gimme.
All right.
What name did childhood asthmatic Rivers Cuomo give to his L.A.-based alternative band?
Oh, geez, why am I blanking on this?
Oh, this is great.
Why am I blanking? Repeat it again? Rivers All Cuomo? Right.
What name did childhood asthmatic Rivers Cuomo give to his L.A.-based alternative band?
Weezer.
That's correct.
Good. Well... Nick is on the board.
Well, I was on the board before. We're tied at two. And I are tied at two. Tom's got one.
Well,
all right. Rough one today.
Last question for this round. Is it Beatles or Elvis? That's your question. It involves Beatles or Elvis trivia.
Yes.
What Gene Vincent hit has long been mistaken for an Elvis recording? Mistaken for an Elvis recording?
Hound Dog?
No, that's an Elvis recording.
Okay.
Bebop-a-looba.
All right.
There you go. All right. Jim?
Tom, Beatles and Elvis, fill in this Beatles song title, Why Don't We Do It in the...
Come on!
And be careful, Tom.
Come on, man!
I believe the answer is road, Jim.
Very good, Tom. Very good.
I was about to say street or perhaps avenue, but it was road.
I don't even know what to say about that. All right. So this is the last question of round one, and then we'll do at this point, we're all tied at two. So I could either break the tie, or if I get it wrong, we're tied going into the second heat.
Okay, Beatles and Elvis. Who released a 1965 album entitled Best of the Beatles that featured neither Lennon, McCartney, Starr, Harrison, or any Beatles songs?
What year?
1965, my friend.
Okay, I mean, they're the most covered band ever, so...
But it's none of their songs.
Wait, it's none of their songs?
Yes, it entitled Best of the Beatles that featured neither Lennon, McCartney, Starr, Harrison, or any Beatles songs. It's called Best of the Beatles.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know this.
The question is, what artist did this?
Yes, who? Who released that album? That's a toughie.
K-Tel?
No.
Nugent?
That'd be Best of the Buffalo. Ex-Beatle Pete Best.
Oh, jeez. Oh, okay. Best of the Beatles. Okay. See? Best of the Beatles. See, I thought it was one of those, because back in the day, there were these record companies that would release these compilations that were like not, they were weird.
Right.
And, yeah. Pete Best. That's pretty funny, actually.
He got us good there.
That's pretty funny.
Going for a Greg Kinn kind of thing there. Yeah. Okay.
All right. All right. Well, we're tied.
All right.
It's a brand new day. A brand new day. So, Tom has two. Jim, you have two. And I have two. And one more round of four questions to go through. So, there you go. All right. Hang on, everybody. We'll do another round of, what the hell is this called? Rock of Ages. Named after that fantastic Def Leppard song. By the way, Def Leppard, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Warren Zevon, never nominated.
Courtesy of the fan vote.
Yeah.
How are you going to feel when Dave is right there with Bon Jovi and Journey and Def Leppard with the fan vote? How are you going to feel about that?
A little weird because I love the band so much. But look, you know, I'm a big fan of Journey.
Journey's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like Journey as much as I like Dave, but, you know. It'll be weird, and I know. And if it happens, I am going to get a whole bunch of crap from people. So, all right, Jim, hang on.
All right,
we'll take a break. Jim Ryan is with us. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Go to RadioJimRyan.com for all the music coverage that he does. We've got one more round of Rock of Ages. Four more questions to go before we crown a winner on this Wednesday morning. Inductees of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Def Leppard, everybody. I actually like that song. And I
like Def Leppard.
I like Def Leppard. I especially like Pyromania. And Hysteria.
Yeah,
Those are great albums.
It's amazing, though, how everything Mutt Lange touched back then sounded exactly like the Hysteria album, though.
Oh, no, there's no question about it. Yeah, no question about it.
The Cars stuff sounded that way. Yep. The Bryan Adams Waking Up the Neighbors album sounded that way.
He had a very distinctive style.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, hey, we're back. It's Nick DiGilio here, and the reason why Rock of Ages was played is because we're playing a round of Rock of Ages, a music trivia game that is pitting myself and Tom and Jim head-to-head-to-head. We are tied at two. I can't stand the tension. So are you ready for your next question?
I am.
Okay. In the category of 50s, 60s, according to the song, what kind of reaction did the group Count Five have in 66?
I have no idea.
A psychotic reaction.
Oh, okay.
You don't know that song?
No, apparently not. Okay. See, this is where I struggle, is these 50s, 60s questions.
Okay. All right.
But I knew this one, Tom. Within 1 year... What year was Neil Diamond born?
Within 1 year?
Within 1 year.
Within 1 year.
1 year over or under? It doesn't matter, just within 1 year.
Within 1 year. So, yeah, either over or under.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm trying to think if that means...
Yeah, you got to think this out.
So, I'm trying to think when he got really popular.
I'm very happy with myself that I guessed this one.
Yeah.
I didn't need the leeway.
All right. I'm going to go with he was probably about my dad's age, so 1952.
Do you want to chime in, Nick? Do you have a guess?
He's older than that.
He is older than that.
Yeah. I would go 40, 41.
41.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's 41. My dad's age.
There you go.
He's my dad's age.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
I deserve
that. Now, the other thing I was thinking when you were being all misterioso, Jim, was because I don't think his real name is Neil Diamond.
Okay.
So I thought maybe they were going to be tricky and say, what year was he?
Did he become Neil Diamond?
Yes, that was what I was thinking. Like, his name is Neil Sampson or something. Right. And so, That would have been way too difficult.
That would have been that would have upped the level of difficulty.
Yeah. All right.
All right, Nick, 50s, 60s.
What happened?
What 1956 musical contains these three soundtrack titles? My Lord and Master, The March of the Siamese Children, and Getting to Know You.
Oh, Getting to Know You. Getting to know. What, 56?
56. 1956.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I've got absolutely nothing on this one.
I did know this one, I will say.
56. Let's see. West Side Story?
Incorrect. The King and I.
Oh, God, of course.
Yeah, Getting to Know You.
Of course. Wow, what an idiot.
What so hard on yourself, man.
Man.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm just disgusted to be alive. Okay, are you ready? 70s, 80s?
Yes.
Name the Oingo Boingo frontman, well, whose many movie and TV compositions include the theme to The Simpsons.
Danny Elfman.
Yes.
Man, I was blanking on it for a sec, too.
Yeah, all right.
Danny Elfman.
Okay.
Time a softball for you here from the 70s, 80s. Oh, are you ready?
Yeah.
Fill in this AC/DC title. Rock and roll ain't noise.
Pollution.
Very good, Tom.
Rock and roll will never die.
Yeah. Why don't we do it in the blank?
Well, God. Straight out of context, here we come.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. 70s and 80s.
Oh,
Nick.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
Come on, these are movie ones. What 1977 movie contains these three soundtrack titles? Nocturnal Pursuit, Climbing Devil's Tower, and The Appearance of the Visitors.
Close Encounters.
Bingo.
Yeah. We're tied again.
I was going to say, are we tied going into three?
We are all doing as evenly as you can possibly do. Not great.
And this is still an improvement for me from last time, I believe.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
All right, Jim. 90s, 2000s. What Seattle-born singer has been the lead voice for Temple the Dog, Soundgarden, and Audioslave?
Chris Cornell.
That's correct. Soundgarden nominated this year.
I was going to say, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominee.
That's right. Okay. All right, go ahead, Jim.
All right, Tom, 90s, 2000s. How many questions did rapper 50 Cent pose to his lover in his number one hit from 2003? Do you know this, Nick?
How many questions did he pose to
his
lover?
How many questions did rapper 50 Cent pose to his lover in his number one hit from 2003?
Oh, my God. The only 50 Cent song I know is Into Club.
Yeah. It's not that one, though.
No, I know it's not. It's, is it 10 questions?
It is not.
What is it?
21.
Damn. Oh, 21. No. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, okay. Tom. Push.
All right. Let's see. So right now, we're getting into the nitty gritty here. Okay, Tim. Or Tim. Tom. I combined your names. Go ahead.
All right. So, 90s, 2000s.
Yeah.
This is a gimme. Sorry. What 1995 movie contains these three soundtrack titles? Sons of Scotland, Falkirk, and The Princess Pleads for Wallace's Life.
That would be Braveheart.
That is correct. Now I'm just angry.
Now we're in the final round. Final round.
Here we go.
Jim.
Yeah.
4-4. Me, 4. Tom, 3.
Okay, Tom.
Here we
go. You can tie it up.
If we miss and you win, or you get it right, all three of us split the Buick.
Okay. I want it Wednesdays.
Okay, Beatles and or Elvis. In the Beatles Sgt. Pepper movie, oh, my God. What real-life brothers played the characters Dave, Bob, and Mark Henderson?
I haven't seen the movie, and I'm trying to think back.
You're a very lucky man.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Real-life brothers?
Real-life brothers.
From back then.
Yeah. Sergeant Pepper.
70s, is that movie?
Yep.
Should I know this one or no?
You should be able to figure it out.
Brothers from the 70s. We're not talking the Hanson brothers?
No.
Unfortunately?
No.
Who is it?
The Bee Gees.
Oh, God. Okay. And I know the Bee Gees are in that, too. Yeah. Damn it. All right.
Yep.
That was painful.
Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees. That one hurts. Yeah. Okay. All right. So here we go. Jim, go ahead. This is for Tom.
Tom, Beatles and Elvis. Which outfit did Elvis wear to the funeral of a Denver policeman? Was it A, Superman tights, B, a simple black suit, or C, a City of Denver police captain's uniform?
I'm going to say the police captain's uniform.
It was,
uniform.
In fact, the police captain's uniform.
He was obsessed with law enforcement.
Yeah, he thought he was the DEA,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on now.
Despite all the drugs he was consuming.
Yeah. I mean, he busted into the White House to meet Nixon because of that. So, all right, last question. Let's see if I get it, I win. If not, we all tie.
Oh, my God. Okay. Had Lisa Marie been a boy, Elvis and Priscilla had already picked which name?
Ooh, I don't know this.
It's multiple choice. Hold on. Was it John Barron, Vernon Stokes, or Jerry Lee?
Vernon Stokes.
I'm going John Barron.
Nick, that is incorrect. It was John Barron.
So we tied?
Oh, my God.
And we've never had a tie.
No, we've never had a three-way tie.
Years of doing this.
A three-way tie. Never had a three-way tie. All right.
How is that handled? We just go with it?
We get a chainsaw and bust up the car. So, all right. Well, Jim, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Always a blast to have you down. We'll have you down in about a month or so.
Sounds good.
And follow him on Radio Jim Ryan on Twitter. All right. We'll be back right after this with the news. One of my favorite TV theme songs of all time. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah. 312-981-7200. Who requested Night Stalker?
So that is coming to us from Paul.
Yeah, I love that TV theme. And I loved that show. I love that show.
Paul and Marilyn really wanted this one. And I've never actually seen that show. I've never seen Kolchak the Night Stalker.
What? Oh, man.
Big shrug, man.
Oh, man.
I want to see it.
Darren McGavin, man. Yeah, see, it started as a TV movie called The Night Stalker. They did a TV movie sequel called The Night Strangler. Both of them were hugely rated.
Now, I've heard of both of those.
Yeah.
So those are related to this television series.
Yes. Kolchak, right. The Night Stalker.
Okay.
And it was the X-Files long before the X-Files. It was a Chicago reporter played by the great Darren McGavin, who was covering stories and incidents that were supernatural or occulty. Because the first movie is about a vampire. Like he's going after a vampire in the original TV movie, The Night Stalker. This was an ABC show, and both of the TV movies were from ABC. And it is in reruns. You can see it on, I think it's Antenna TV that shows Night Stalker. Or at least they used to. It's a great show. When I was a kid, I loved it. I still love it because it deals with like scary stuff. Yeah, it was cool. And that's a really, really great theme song. So, hey, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after the 4:30 news, as we do every Wednesday after the 4:30 news, we play a round of Know Your Onion. And that's where Tom is your host. We get two listeners on. They play two solo rounds each. And Tom will read a news headline. And the contestant's job is to decide whether it is a real news headline or a false satirical news headline from the funny newspaper, The Onion. It gets a little blurry as to what's real news and what isn't anymore. So that's what we're doing. We're doing Know Your Onion. Get in there. Everybody is a winner, even when they lose. So if you can know the difference between a real news headline and an Onion news headline, there you go. That's all coming up. That's coming up after the 4:30 news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right. So there's an interesting phenomenon in the movie world, which we haven't really talked about a lot, but which movies have been really affected by test screenings? And test screenings, meaning, you know, these are usually pop-up screenings that nobody really knows about. You don't know the title of the movie. You go in, they introduce the movie, they say how far along the movie is, if it's a rough cut, and they want to get the opinion of an audience to see how well it's playing, how will it play with the audience. A lot of this stuff happens because studios, a lot of studios are kind of insecure about box office, and they want to make sure that they've got something on their hands that is going to make a ton of money that that audiences will enjoy. So they get a test audience, bring them into a movie theater, introduce it, give opinion cards. They show the movie. When the movie's over, the audience sits, fills out opinion cards, and sometimes they even have like a Q&A afterwards about what they liked or disliked about the movie. This kind of thing happens with products of all kinds. We know that. Like, they do marketing tests on these things. And the movies aren't you know, they're not immune from that because it's the movie business. And so obviously these executives want these movies to do well as completely possible, so they do test screenings. A lot of movies have been affected by test screenings, and some of them we don't know about. There's a lot of them. But according to Martin Scorsese, this one blows my mind. The 1990 blockbuster Goodfellas is a modern classic, an Oscar nominee that's enjoyed much longer shelf life than most Oscar winners. It's surprising then to learn the first audiences to see it were as dismissive as it was Scorsese with the Marvel movies. You see what they did there? The famed director revealed in an interview with Entertainment Weekly that at least 70 people walked out of the first test screening of it because of its excessive violence. Scorsese noted that screenings help a director determine what's confusing, and especially in case of a violent film, how much an audience can tolerate. According to the EW story, the screen test helped Scorsese and the Warner Brothers studio executives with two important sequences in the movie. One was the very, very opening sequence in which Pesci's Tommy DeVito, a performance that scored him an Oscar win, stabs Billy Batts in the trunk. We noticed the moment Joe took out the knife, people started laughing. They were outraged. When he stabbed Billy Batts in the trunk, after the first two stabs, people started leaving. And then he did it a third time, and more people left. And I asked my editor, Thelma Schoonmaker, how many more we got left? She said 7. So, okay, we didn't need them leaving this soon. We see the knife, we get it. The final scene ended up having 4 stabs. The screen test also allowed Scorsese to keep in a scene studio executives were urging him to cut. In it, the gangsters sit in with DeVito's mother, who, wait a minute. They wanted that scene cut? That's one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they sit with DeVito's mom, played by Scorsese's real mom, Catherine, as Bats bleeds out in the trunk. The studio thought it was too long, apparently, but people in the screening responded well to it, and that's why it stayed put. It's why Scorsese is thankful for early screenings. A preview screening version doesn't mean it's my cut. In the process of making a movie, I screen it for some people, then go, maybe we didn't need that. Test screenings for a while were very helpful. I don't know if it is anymore, at least not for me.
Well, once you get to a certain level of prestige, I wonder how much you get to say about whether or not you have them. I'm guessing Scorsese could be like, no, I'm Martin Scorsese. We're not doing test screenings outside of like the company, you know?
One of the things that we did when I was with the factory, and to my knowledge they still do at the factory, was they would have, during the rehearsal process, they would have 3 separate ensemble only performances. You know, and this is before the set is built, and people understand that because they're in the ensemble before the set is built or the costumes are finalized or any of that stuff. And because we at the factory did, and they still do, all original material, we could cut and change whatever we want. You can't do that if you're doing Shakespeare or if you're doing, you know, a well-established, you know, if you're doing like Shepard or Mamet or any of these guys. You can't do that. You got to be letter. You got to be, you know, the letter is word. And so I found them as a director. Sometimes I found them frustrating. I'll be quite honest with you. I was never a huge fan of the ensemble invites.
Well, it seems like you might as well just let the material live or die on its own in front of an audience. if you're going to write something,
yeah,
I believe that there is a certain level of understanding that it's going to get in front of an audience and potentially get eviscerated anyway.
Well,
so why not write the thing and perform the thing that you wrote, and it's going to live or die regardless?
In our case, at the factory, and especially with me as a director and or a writer, I cut the hell out of stuff. I changed stuff a lot, even if I wasn't the writer. I would improvise. I would come up with new ideas. I would write new lines. I would do that a lot. I would change a lot of stuff.
But that was as director.
Yeah.
So,
I would like move scenes around and cut stuff.
Sure.
And now we did have we were lucky to have access to the writer because they were a member of the ensemble. So sometimes they were there at performances. Sometimes I would call them and go, "Hey, I'm cutting the scene.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?" And then sometimes we'd get into a discussion about it. We may compromise or not. But that was just the we had the luxury of being able to do that, like I said, because all original material written by ensemble members. So we had access to the writer to call them immediately and go, "Hey, tomorrow that scene's gone."
Mm-hmm.
But I did a lot of changing. Like every play that I directed was completely different or a lot different than what was handed to me as the original script.
That makes sense to me, though, because your name is on it as director.
Right.
And maybe that's a conversation you and the writer are going to have, just like Scorsese and, say, Steve Zaillian might have for The Irishman.
Yeah.
He might go be like, "All right, I'm cutting this scene. We're not going to do this. We're going to film this differently. We're going to rewrite." So to me, that's different than having people come in. And while you might trust them, it's your ensemble. You know, how many more people can you trust in your ensemble?
I understand that. But yeah. I'll tell you what. I think it was because when we first started doing it, because we didn't do ensemble performances. We didn't do performances for ensemble. That wasn't introduced until, geez, I want to say late 90s, maybe. So it was late into the early 2000s. The company got together in 92. Never. So in about 10 years, that was not a process that we did. So for about the 10 years. And then it started.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first play that I directed when we had our first ensemble. It was right after the performance, like literally right after the performance. And the performance did not go very well. It was not a good run. And I knew that. And the company said, they had said, "Hey, listen, let's do this meeting in the office right now." And I didn't even give notes yet. I didn't even give notes to my actors yet. And I remember being really pissed. And everybody was talking at the same time. And for me, it was counterproductive. And almost all of the notes they were giving me, I had written down as being a problem. Because like I said, it was a bad performance. It was a bad run through. So when they were throwing all this stuff at me and this should change and this should change, I got real. I cut myself off completely. I remember this because people got really mad at me. The company got really mad at me. Because I just shut down. I completely shut down and did not listen to anything. And I just started shaking my head. And I was like, "Okay, can we get this over with? Because I still have notes to give. It's like 11 o'clock at night. My actors are tired. You're giving me notes problems that I already know exist. And I will get to them when I get to them. I just don't need to have a barrage of them thrown at me." So that was the very first one we ever did. And I was not happy about it. And then eventually, the process changed, and we would give them note cards. We would give people note cards, and they would write stuff down. And that was the way we realized to do it. But throwing ideas at me, one over the next, it was absurd, and it made me really angry. Now, sometimes I would not take, when we got to the point where it was sort of anonymous, but you can feel how a show is going, how a play is going, how a run is going by listening to the audience. You can hear when they're interested. You can hear when they're laughing. You know when the laughs are coming. I know when an audience, I can feel when an audience enjoys a play and when they don't. So changing the process of the ensemble performances by making it, don't give any notes to the director afterwards, write the stuff down, we'll talk about it tomorrow. That made it much easier. But that first night when everybody was throwing stuff at me that I already knew was a problem, and my actors are in the other room who aren't part of the ensemble waiting in the theater for me to give notes to them after they've already done a performance, I was like, "You can't do this to me." So the first one was a disaster.
But it became a little bit more helpful.
It did. I'll be quite honest with you. I dismissed a lot of notes that I got.
Sure.
I'm kind of a jerk when I guess people think I'm a jerk when I'm a director, but I think I know. I mean, look, I've directed a lot of shows, and I've got a good sense of what's funny and what isn't funny and what works and what isn't, mm-hmm. what doesn't work. And sometimes I'll just be like, if it's an idea that I think is just completely stupid and counter to what I think is funny in the scene, no, I'm not going to change it. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know how I would last as a filmmaker if I had to do that.
Well, especially I'd probably go nuts. You're showing an unfinished product.
An unfinished product. Well, yeah, and that's what we were doing because there was no, you know, there were no sound effects. Like we would have if it was a show that required some sound effects or stuff like that. It wasn't there. And then I would have to explain afterwards, you see, there's going to be a sound effect there, or there's a gunshot here, or that costume, when you walk in, it's going to get a laugh, because it looks this way. I would have to explain that, and I didn't want to do it. And I'll tell you, that first night, I wanted to punch somebody in the mouth. I was so mad. So, test screenings for movies. There's a lot of movies that have been affected by them. A lot. And we're going to talk about that, and the strange world of test screenings.
Every time I look at you, I go blind.
Every time I look at you, I go blind.
Every time I look at you, I go blind.
Every time I look at you, I go blind.
In the morning.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. We got, after the 4:30 news, we'll be playing another edition of Know Your Role. Get ready to tell the difference between Know Your Role, Know Your Onion, Know Your Role. I don't know why I've got the rock in my head.
Do you know your muffin, too?
Know your onion. So Know Your Onion. You got to tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline. That's coming up after the 4:30 news. Also coming up, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking about... test screenings and how they are executed and how films are affected by them. And we got a whole bunch of movies here that were actually affected by test screenings. There's a lot of them. And, you know, it's a practice that's been around for many, 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 many years. And so we're going to talk about some of the movies and how the test screenings work and all that stuff. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, I have two good ones that are totally an example of test screenings. They changed the endings on both of them. Both the characters died, and they changed it. Of course, First Blood and Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, and I dislike both of those changes. Especially Fatal Attraction. The way that Fatal Attraction ends now as opposed to the way it did end was that she killed herself, and Michael Douglas was framed, his fingerprints were found on the knife, and then he ended up going to jail, which means he got his comeuppance for being a jerk for the entire movie. So I was fine. I was fine with that. So the ending now, where the wife comes in, shoots her, is just stupid. As far as First Blood goes, the ending where Rambo dies is better, but everybody knew that because Stallone likes to make 55 sequels to everything that he does, that they didn't want John Rambo to die, that they could do another movie. And that's exactly what happened. First Blood was a big hit, and then it went on to become, I mean, there's another Rambo movie that's in theaters right now. But I prefer the ending where Rambo dies.
So. But they both changed it, and the rest is history.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dyke.
No problem.
Have you ever seen the cut where John Rambo dies at the end?
Yeah, I've got Rambo 1-3 on Blu-ray, so it comes with the alternate ending.
Yeah,
it's quite. I like it. It works.
I think it's great.
He gives a hell of a performance.
I've said this many times before. That's my favorite Stallone movie. First Blood is my favorite Stallone movie. I think it's the best performance he's ever given.
Yeah, it's really weird when I get super emotional in the very first scene when he goes up to. Goes up to the guy's wife's house. He's like, "Oh, is he here?"
Yeah.
And he's just like, "No, he's not here. He died of cancer a few years ago."
Yeah,
that's just the look on his face is really,
well,
really
the
upsetting.
The whole walking back into town after Dennehy drives him out—that's one of my favorite moments in the entire movie, and a moment that builds tension that is palpable. So, yeah, but it did change. I mean, he died at the original cut of First Blood. John Rambo dies, but they wanted sequels, so they changed it. So test screenings did that, and they've done a lot more too. So let's see. Here's Doc on WGN. Go ahead, Doc.
Hey, Nick. Hey, man. I got.
By the way, Doc. Thank you for the 9,000 pounds of candy that you sent in. That was really unnecessary, but we thank you for it.
It's Take Five that you like, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, I love them. They're my favorite. So thank you very much.
All right, man. Hey, I got two stories on these events that I attended. One a spectator, one I worked at. I was working for a marketing research company. But I saw, as a spectator, I saw the movie Popeye, and Robert Altman and Shelley Duvall were there.
Oh, my God.
But they drove up. They were surrounded by several people. They were all dressed in black. They whooshed them through the crowd and never to be seen again. And then when they introduced the movie, they said it's a little bit smaller than the screen. And I swear it was a 10 by 10 foot.
Oh.
And it was hard to see. And it broke at least three times.
Oh, my God.
And a couple of them for like 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh.
And people were so relieved when it was over. They were walking out of there flipping those cards in the air going, hey, here's a suggestion. Get a movie that doesn't break, you know?
Yeah, and that's a very weird and divisive movie as it is. You know, Popeye is a very strange movie. And
when people have one frame of reference, you know,
a cartoon. Yeah.
But wow. The other one, I was working for, and I'd be anxious to see if this one's on your list. I was working for a marketing research company, and we were only hired to pick up the cards and literally hand them to the customer.
Right.
So that they could take them away and look at them. But the movie was War of the Roses.
Oh.
And you could tell with that ending, all the comments are going to be about the ending.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well.
But it was really weird to see people walking out of there going, what the hell was that about?
Well, you know? Here's the thing about War of the Roses, I can tell you. Well, that was changed, Doc, from the test screenings, and it wasn't the ending. They end up they for those people who haven't seen War of the Roses, it's like 35 years old, so you might want to catch up. 30 years old, actually. They end up dead at the end of the movie. Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas end up dead. That didn't change, but here's what changed, Doc. There's a scene in the movie. You've seen it, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there's a scene in the movie earlier in the movie, you know, this is about two people who are sharing, cohabitating in a big house, and they're going through one of the worst divorces of all time that you can possibly imagine. They hate each other. So Michael Douglas, he gets in the car one night to get some medication, sleeping pills. He backs out and runs over her cat. So Kathleen Turner has a cat. He has a dog. So Kathleen Turner, her cat is dead. She finds out about it and that, you know, like he ran the cat over and then... Okay, later in the movie, they decide they're going to have this truce where they're going to meet in this dilapidated, because they've destroyed the entire house at this point. And so she is dressed all sexy. They open a bottle of wine. They're going to make up. And he's eating her pâté. She has this famous pâté. And so he goes, nobody can be bad if you make pâté this good. And then she goes, well, that depends on what the pâté is made out of. And then she goes, woof, woof. And he loses his mind because it intimates that she killed the dog and she made pate out of the dog. Okay. When they test screened it, and in fact, she did, and the audiences went nuts. They wrote, you can't do that. You can't kill this dog. It's fine that the two main characters, the humans, die at the end. But the killing of the dog and turning the dog into pate was way too much for test audiences, and they overwhelmingly went nuts. So... they added this cutaway scene where the dog is outside because he throws something at her after he discovers that she may have made pate out of the dog. So he throws something. They cut to a cutaway outside. The dog goes, huh? He's still alive. So I hate that scene. I hate that moment where they cut to the dog being alive because the movie just keeps getting darker and darker and darker and darker and darker, and that takes a step back. I got to hit the news here, Doc, but thank you, buddy.
All right, sir.
All right, take care. I hate that. I hate it. When I remember when I taped the movie off of cable, I cut that part out. I paused it and cut it out. So in the version that I had on VHS off cable, the dog was dead. The dog was pate. All right. The news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah! That's any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 4:30 news, get ready to call in, because the first two listeners to call in will be our contestants for another round of Know Your Onion, where you have to tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline. So 312-981-7200. Who requested the Dan?
So that's coming to us from Paul, different Paul from earlier, and he's dedicating that one to all the newspaper guys out there throwing out the newspapers, delivering your papers every day.
Okay, there you go. We have a lot of those guys listening to the show. A lot of ladies who do that job as well,
doing the Lord's work out there
at this time of the morning. That's exactly what they're up doing. And we thank them for their work. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about the sometimes crazy world of movie test screenings, where they bring in a test audience to show maybe a rough cut of a movie or an early cut of a film, and then get their response to it, and they'll make changes. And we're talking about some of the changes that were made in famous movies. Now, here's one. 28 Days Later. Danny Boyle's impressive zombie-esque movie. Oh, I like how they termed it zombie-esque, because they're not zombies. Had a very bleak ending when the original cut came in. It saw Cillian Murphy's character lying in his hospital, having been shot, slowly dying. That's too downbeat, screamed the test audiences. Murphy was saved, and instead, in its zombie-esque creatures who were on the verge of death as the film closed, it's the zombie-esque creatures who, as the film closed to... Is that cut exist?
I have not seen the one where he dies in there. I've seen one where, and there's an alternate cut on the DVD release where the ending is, it's been a long time since I've watched the alternate ending, because I like the original. I like the ending that made the theatrical cut. But I believe he gets infected, so he locks himself in a room. And he just kind of like transforms in there. I believe that's it. It's been, like I said, it's been a long time. But either way, the alternate cut is Jim dies. In the theatrical cut, he lives.
Okay. How about Alien 3?
Oh my gosh.
Well, the stuff that Fincher went through making that movie. I'm surprised he came back and made more movies.
Yeah, I figured he would have quit.
Yeah.
I really did.
I mean, all the crap that he went through on that from Fox.
Because it took until what? Fight Club? Did he make anything between Alien 3 and Fight Club?
Wait a minute. Alien 3 was 93, right? 93?
92?
92.
Somewhere in there.
Okay. I think he had to make something before Fight Club. No, 7. He made 7. 7 was
That's
before
it.
Fight Club.
Yeah.
So this is interesting, because I'm looking at this article. They mention Alien 3, but they don't mention Aliens. And Aliens has huge cuts in it. And I know the thing runs 2.5 hours already. But one of the major, to me at least, one of them, and because they have the full director's cut, you can actually see that one.
Yeah.
One of the major things to me was that helps explain why she is so completely obsessed with saving Newt and actually puts everybody's life on the line in order to do it, which was always a thing that bothered me about the movie, was that, like, she's in charge of a lot of people, and they're all going to die because she wants to go back and save this little girl who's not her daughter. And that always was the thing that bothered me, until the part that was cut out, which was, as you know, at the end of Alien, she's in hyperspace. She's in hypersleep. She's asleep.
Yep, 57 years.
57 years, she's gone. What they cut out of the original, which you can actually see, because the full Aliens James Cameron version is out there, but which is, to me, a massive point of the entire movie, is that on Earth, while she was in hyperspace for 57 years, she had a baby. There was a baby on Earth who grew up and died while she was gone.
Lived her entire life.
And died. Very much like Interstellar, my friend, who died. And so this explains, when she finds out about this, obviously she freaks out. And, and then this explains her obsession with sacrificing everybody for this Newt girl.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in that Cameron cut that makes a lot of sense. I think you take it out and it still works really, really well.
There's no question about it.
And it's a much leaner movie, despite being 2.5 hours. But I do like to revisit his director's cut, because it shows a lot of things that give a little world building. Like, you see people on LV-426.
Right.
That's all cut out. You see how the alien breeding starts with Newt's parents.
Right.
That's cut out. And so it works when it's in there, but you don't necessarily need it.
I'm not kidding. When I saw the movie in 1986 in the theater for the first time, I was like, man, you know, like I would actually absolutely understand if this were her actual daughter and if she didn't just meet this little girl. And I realize that it's a little girl whose life is in danger, but everybody is telling her she's going to die. Everybody is telling her she's probably dead already, you know? And so I remember watching the movie going, this is nuts. You know, I mean, and still the movie kicked ass. There's no question about it. But like her motivation for being that obsessed with Newt seemed weird to me. And then when I heard about the subplot, I went, oh, she lost a daughter. That makes sense.
Yeah, the theatrical cut relies a little bit too heavily on, oh, she's a woman, so she wants to be a mother.
Right.
Even though motherhood is very much a theme of
all of
them.
It's a total theme of all of them, yeah.
But I do like that she lost her actual daughter,
yeah.
So there's a lot more just missing something.
The subtext, you know? Is much deeper.
Yeah,
it's
I like
much
that.
Deeper. So Alien 3, they went, he had to deal with Fox. There's too many things to like narrow down to what they did in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Apocalypse Now. Well, I mean, Apocalypse Now was under with problems too. He didn't have an ending. You just watch Hearts of Darkness and you go, how the hell did he get this movie made? How did he get it made? Dealing with all the crap he had to deal with. Heart attacks, weather,
Marlon
budgets,
Brando.
Marlon Brando not knowing his line, Dennis Hopper out of his mind on Hooch, just... Yeah, but you can see it all in Hearts of Darkness, which is a remarkable documentary. But, and I've told you this before, it always feels like a movie that didn't have an ending. Like, when the very first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell happened to the end of this movie? I don't like the ending of Apocalypse Now. It just completely...
And
I just don't like it.
I'm the opposite. I love that. I love the chaos. I love the lack of resolution.
Yeah, but I understand that. I understand symbolically what that's leading up to. But that he had no. But ultimately, he had no choice but to end it that way.
Right.
Which
I don't know.
So I don't know. Jeff in San Diego said, saw a test screening of South Park: Bigger, Longer, Uncut with the president of Paramount present. People walked out within minutes, and me and my brother stayed crying, laughing. People who probably never seen South Park before and thought that it was an animated movie that was going to be fun. Because, you know, South Park, when that movie came out, South Park was only on the air for about 3 years at that point. 2.5, 3 years. So, you know, a lot of people maybe didn't have Comedy Central, maybe didn't know what South Park was, and like, oh, look at the cute little animated kids. And then 10 minutes into the movie, you know. Trevor in Antioch says, geez, and how many movies does Michael Douglas die in?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yes, he does.
Not in Romancing the Stone, though.
He does not. Damn it. The Doobie Brothers broke up. That's my favorite line. When they're in the crashed plane and they're burning the weed on the campfire and he finds an old copy of Rolling Stone. He and Kathleen Turner are sitting at the campfire. Yeah. Damn it. The Doobie Brothers broke up. Robert Zemeckis, man. Oh, man. All right. Hey, let's take a break, shall we?
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah.
That is any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Who wanted the Screaming Jay Hawkins?
That's coming to us from Ken in Milwaukee.
All right, Ken in Milwaukee. There you go, Wildcard Wednesday. All right, 312-981-7200. Hey, coming up after the 4:30 news, when we break for the 4:30 news, we want you to start calling in at 312-981-7200, because the first two people through will be our two contestants for this morning's round of Know Your Onion. So right when we go to the news, start dialing those phones at 312-981-7200 and be our contestants for Know Your Onion for this morning. All right. We are talking about the wonderful world of movie test screenings and how some movies have been really affected by them. And if you want to jump in with anything about this, it's 312-981-7200. How about this? Babe, Pig in the City. The story goes that Universal pretty much left director George Miller to his own devices on Babe 2.
That explains the nitro trucks.
The original surprise hit and a Best Picture Oscar nominee had opened the studio's eyes to a franchise, and thus Miller was given relatively free rein to follow it up. Oh, I can't imagine what they saw, what they thought when they saw it.
What a strange movie.
It's a great movie, but it's much darker and much crazier. You know, you can see that because it's George Miller. It's much darker and much crazier than the original, of which Miller was an executive producer. When Universal first test screened the film, though, at Anaheim Hills nearly a month before its release, it knew it had a big, big problem. Parents complained that the film, which featured animals being dragged within an inch of their lives, was too scary for children. Universal didn't have much time to make changes. Some alterations were made, but the biggest problem was that said test screening had initiated troubling word of mouth. Universal upped its marketing, went for a big opening weekend, and soon scrapped plans for Babe 3 as families began to avoid the film. The changes that were made, incidentally, included Miller shortening a sequence where a goldfish flaps around out of the water, a cutting back of scenes of near drowning, a toning down of the scores, and removing moments within Mickey Rooney's clown character. At a special premiere, it had to be canceled to accommodate the changes. So there you go. And it still came out. You know, here's a little a little piece of trivia about this movie. It's a piece of trivia that I really love. Gene Siskel loved this movie. Gene Siskel loved Babe, Pig in the City. It was his last number one movie on his top ten, on his last ever top ten list.
Really?
It was the last movie he ever put number one on a top ten list.
It was Babe, Pig in the
Babe,
City.
Babe, Pig in the City.
Wow.
He went to bat for that movie. I remember when it came out and all this stuff was happening, because it's a really twisted, dark movie. I will fully admit that. It's also insanely brilliant. But he totally went to bat for it. He was the biggest fan of that movie. So, oh, how about this? Bonfire of the Vanities. Oh, my God. You ever read Devil's Candy about the making of it?
I have not, but it's been recommended to me a number of times.
Yeah.
But I'm just, on a certain level, I'm not that curious because I hate Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yeah, see, I do not.
I don't have any particular attachment to the source material either. I guess it would be interesting to read just because, like, how bad can the making of
a
movie go?
Well, it's not so much the big thing about it. Because I think the movie, first of all, it's Brian De Palma, and I kind of forgive him for a lot of things.
That you do.
I do. I love him. And I love, there are things about Bonfire of the Vanity that I absolutely love. I think it's beautifully shot. The opening shot of the movie is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to a mediocre movie that he made, like Snake Eyes, which has an extraordinary opening shot.
Right.
And that leaves enough for me. You know, like I go, okay, the first 10 minutes were amazing, you know. But the thing about this movie was the casting. This is one of the, Bonfire of the Vanities is one of the most miscast movies of all time. Like the wrongest people were chosen to play the main roles. Tom Hanks, all wrong for that role. Bruce Willis, all wrong for that role. But there were things about it that I love. I don't think it's a great movie, but that's another one that went through. I mean, if you get into details about test screenings and recutting and refilming of things, you got to get the Devil's Candy. Did you know this? Did you know that they took a break from filming because they were having so much trouble with it? They had to take a break from filming.
Mm-hmm.
And, when they came back to shoot more, Melanie Griffith went from suddenly, she shows up on the set, she went from filming a bunch of scenes where she was a B cup to showing up on set with D's. Yes.
Oh, she had work done.
Yes.
Oh my.
She shows up, like, I think they took a break for like 5 weeks or something like that, because they had to do rewrite, because the script was rewritten like a million times.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very, very troubled movie, Bonfire of the Vanities. And I'm one of the only people that actually defends anything about it. But she had B cups when they started filming the movie. They took that break. She came back. D cups. And De Palma's like, what did you do? So they reshot stuff as much as they could, but there are moments in the movie where her breast size fluctuates. If you watch the movie, I'm not kidding.
If you're very astute,
I'm not kidding. Because she went big. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
D's are big, and she went from a B, and then boom! Like suddenly it's like whoa,
va va voom.
Yeah.
Well, De Palma's kind of that sort of guy. He's always been a bit of a handful. He wants things to be the way they are. I think did he shoot Obsession in Rome?
Yes.
He had a hell of a time with the Italian crew.
Yeah.
He really was not very nice, but wanted them to do what he wanted to do.
Did you see De Palma, the Noah Baumbach documentary?
Yeah.
But it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. It's great.
It's just him. It's just him talking and them showing clips and behind the scenes stuff. It's like, that was like a gift to De Palma fans. Let me just say.
I watched it
20 times.
I still watch it when I'm bored. I'm like, you know, I'm going to watch De Palma
and
talk
just
about
listen
his life.
To Brian De Palma talk. And he says like, aw shucks a lot and golly and stuff like that. Like those kind of phrases coming out of a guy that makes the kind of movies that he makes.
Yeah.
Like these hard R-rated, violent, filled with sex movies.
Yeah. But that particular anecdote. You can find it was he talked about it on the I want to say Dick Cavett. It was him and Scorsese on Dick Cavett talking about it. And he talked about being on Obsession and all the stuff directors have to go. It's a great. I mean, Dick Cavett, one of the best interviewers of all time.
Yeah.
So there you go. But it does not surprise me that Bonfire of the Vanities was a total train wreck.
Now you know what he considers. You know, like you've seen the documentary De Palma. Mm-hmm. Do you know what he considers his best film? And when he was finished with it, he said, "I'll never make a better movie than this."
God, what?
Not considered one of his best movies. But he considers it one of his best. I think the movie's great. I don't think it's one of his best, but I think it's
great.
Was
it Casualties of War?
No.
No. Which one was it?
Carlito's Way.
Oh, yeah. He really loves I really don't.
I like Carlito's Way. I don't adore it. Casualties of War is another one that he holds very close to his heart.
Yeah, but that movie is actually, I think, really
Casualties
good.
Casualties of War is a masterpiece, as far as I'm concerned.
That is really great.
But yeah, but he said, he feels all of the stuff that he talks about in that documentary about the making of Carlito's Way, it's the most emotional he gets.
Which is so weird. I just never got that from Carlito's Way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's his words. It's his feelings. I trust him. You know, he's not someone who likes to BS.
No, there are great sequences in it. In the Grand Central Station, in the train station, the long foot chase in the train station that just goes on forever.
Yeah, a ton of people love it.
It's brilliant. There's great stuff in it. But he loves that movie. His direct quote is, when I saw the final cut, I would never make a better movie than this. So, all right. The news is coming up after this.
Red Skies.
The Fix rules. I love The Fix.
Is this song in a movie?
Red Skies at Night. I do not think so.
Okay, for some reason.
Deeper and Deeper by The Fix is in Streets of Fire.
Right. Just for some reason, this particular song sticks out to me. Who knows?
I don't know. I'd have to go back. And, but I love The Fix. God. One of my favorite bands. One of my favorite bands from the 80s. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're about to jump into another round of Know Your Onion. Know Your Onion. We've got our contestants. They're all set and ready to go. Hang on for a second. We'll set the whole thing up. Who requested The Fix for Wild Card Wednesday?
It's coming to us from Caribbean Bob or Caribbean Bob.
Ah, whatever you prefer.
Yeah.
Okay. Fix rules. All right. So, Know Your Onion. We got our contestants. Everybody hang on. Know Your Onion is something we do, a game we play every Wednesday morning at 4:30. And it involves this. Tom reads a news headline, and you have to decide whether that news headline is real or it's from the fake newspaper, satirical newspaper, The Onion. The news right now in the real world is insane, and sometimes it's very difficult to tell whether it's real or The Onion, and it's up to you to figure that out. And then you'll win some prizes. You won't go home empty-handed even if you don't get it. You have to get the majority of 5 correct, which would be 3. As these headlines are read to you. So let's start this, shall we?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Oh, 60,000 people in the studio right now, including the band.
It's a little warm.
It is a bit warm. So, but we are ready to play. Are we ready to play?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's get to our first contestant. Our first contestant is John. He's in Gray's Lake. John, welcome.
Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. You're familiar with The Onion?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's begin. Tom, you ready?
Yes, sir. Let's get a little bit of that music going. Okay. All right, John, your first headline here. Australians are better prepared to care for animals than babies in emergencies. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's probably real.
Let's see. That is very real. Good job, John.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, it's coming to us from Western Sydney University that released
it. Doesn't surprise me in the least, especially considering the most insane creatures in the world live in Australia.
Yeah, most things in Australia are actively trying to kill you.
Yes. All right, good job, John. You're one for one.
Okay, John, your next headline here. Movie theater security reports suspicious behavior after a patron buys a ticket to Gemini Man. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, that sounds like a real too, I think, sir.
Let's see.
Ooh. That, I had to turn off my mic because I busted out laughing. That is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. John, the reason why they made it, you know, obviously it's taking off a little bit on what's going on in the controversy around Joker, but nobody bought tickets to see Gemini Man. It's one of the biggest flops, so that's where it came from. All right, you're 1-1. That's funny. I got to read that. Is that a whole article or is
it's
it one of those?
A whole article.
Okay,
baby.
So because sometimes, you know, The Onion does the poll quotes and that's it. Like on the front of The Onion, they just have the, you know, the headline and that's it.
Right, right.
So I got to read that. I got to read that. Okay.
Okay, John, let's go to your next headline. The DMV wants to charge motorists a $15 fee for walking in the door. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, I haven't heard that one. They're doing everything else nowadays. I haven't heard that. I think that's bogus.
Let's see. No,
that's real.
It's coming to us from the Providence Journal. They want to charge a $15 fee for those who go to the DMV to get services that could be done electronically or by mail.
Yeah. All right. You can't get another one wrong, John, or you lose. You're 1-2.
Okay, right, let's get them.
All right, here we go.
Okay, John. Arizona Cardinals Kyler Murray stuns on the field in his new platform cleats. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Real.
Let's see.
Oh, John, that's The Onion. That's definitely The Onion.
Yeah, he did.
Boy, I got cold.
Yeah, you did. You started out hot and then you went real cold there, John. But listen, speaking of hot and cold, you ready for your prize? You got a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. It's really a cool thing. And, John, you got it. Now you got to hang on, okay, sir?
Okay, we'll do it, Nick. Right. Have a good day.
You too, John. Hang on. There we go. All right. Didn't do so well.
That's okay. Great guy, John.
Yeah, very cool guy. And he's got himself the desktop indoor weather station.
It's going to come in handy.
It's awesome. All right. Let's see. Are we ready for our next contestant?
Absolutely.
All right, here's Dave. He's in Jefferson Park. Hey, you know what else is in Jefferson Park? The Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet. I just thought I'd let everybody know.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right, man, what's up?
Okay. Insomnia.
Insomnia. Okay, good. So you do know The Onion?
Yes.
Okay, so you have to guess whether these news headlines are real or from The Onion. Okay, Tom?
Gotcha.
Go.
All right, let's do this. All right, Dave, your first headline. Bernie Sanders renounces his call for economic equality after a brush with death teaches him that money isn't everything. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Onion.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Very good, yep, Dave.
That very good.
Someone
very
watched good. The debates.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't.
Maybe he didn't. But still, that one sounds real. That one sounds, okay, sounds like The Onion to me. Okay, go ahead, Tom.
All right, Dave, your next headline. A phallus-shaped subtropical storm, Melissa, arouses commentary on Twitter. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Real.
Let's see. Very real. That's an unfortunate shape for a tropical storm.
Well, also, just some smart aleck wrote the headline. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's coming to us from the Huffington Post.
Well, the Huffington Post being smart alecky using the word arouses.
You got to give them points for that,
oh,
though.
Come
That's pretty
on,
funny.
Man.
That's pretty funny.
All right.
It sounds like the guy should be working for the Onion.
Yeah, maybe he should. Maybe
there
he's
you go.
Okay, listen, Dave, you get the next one right, you are a winner because you got to get 3 out of 5. So here we go.
All right, Dave, your next headline. You're just jealous of my eyebrows, Justin Trudeau tells crying baby. Is that real or is that the Onion?
Onion.
Let's see.
Wait a minute, no!
That is very real.
No, 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 no. Come on now.
Yes, and if I may, I will play you a little bit of audio proving that that is what he said.
Oh.
You're just jealous of my eyebrows, aren't you? You'll get eyebrows one day.
Yeah, that's Justin Trudeau teasing a baby for not having
that's
eyebrows.
Fantastic. That is fantastic. Oh, man. That one had me fooled, too, Dave, I got to tell you. All right, you still got a couple chances here. All right, Tom, go ahead.
All right, next up, let's go over to this one. A 6-year-old YouTuber buys an $8 million property. Is that real or is that the Onion?
Onion.
Let's see. That is very real.
Yeah, I buy that. I totally buy that. That's real.
Yeah, very, a 6-year-old YouTuber famous for her cute little bits. Well, technically, she did not buy it, but her money paid for an $8 million property.
That doesn't surprise me at all. That sounds so. It's one of those stories that's insane, and it's obviously real.
Yeah, and you can see that story on WGNTV.com.
We're responsible for it then. All right. Well, Dave, you got to get this. Is do or die, buddy. You're 2-2, so you got to get this one right in order to win. Here we go.
All right, let's go to... here we are. TGI Fridays has announced they will be offering a sip of beer on their kids' menu as long as children swear they won't tell their folks. Is that real or is that the Onion?
Totally Onion.
Well, let's see.
Of course it's the Onion. It's TGI Fridays is the joke? Is that
Yeah,
what they
TGI
said?
Fridays. Yeah.
They would be out of business in 2 seconds if that were something that was real. hey, Dave, congratulations, my man.
Thank you, Nick.
Yes, Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. By the way, there's one that's not very far from where you live, Dave. It's at Irving and Keeler. It's at Irving and Keeler. It's right there.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, okay. But, you know, I always still like the old school, you know, the one on Lincoln, the original.
No, this one's closer. It's not very far from where you live. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. By the way, there's a new one in the Wrigley building that just opened up a couple of days ago. A brand-new, spanking, very cool, stylish Lou Malnati's that has opened in the Wrigley building right down on Michigan Avenue. So, and you can also order online at loumalnatis.com. Congratulations, Dave. Thanks for playing and thanks for listening.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, Dave, hang on, okay? Got to hang on. There we go. So, Dave's our winner. All right. Everyone's a winner when we play that. Okay. We'll do it again next week. We play Know Your Onion every Wednesday morning right after the 4:30 news. And all you got to do is call in, and the first two listeners that call in become our contestants for that morning. And we will do it again next week. And right now we're going to break. I'll give you some weather. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up the show and talk more about how many movies were affected by movie test screenings and some of the changes that had to be made and some of the stories behind it. And if you've got anything to say about that, you want to jump in, talk or text us. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m., and the opening bell comes at 5 a.m., and then Steve Cochran at 6. Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday, wrapping that up. And who requested that?
So that's coming to us from our good pal, Harold. It is the Monster Mash as covered by the Misfits.
There you go. All right. Coming up, and the news is next with Vic, and it's from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So there you go. All right. We've been talking about the world of movie test screenings and how they've affected movies in the past. We got a couple of texts here. Mike in L.A. says, go Hawks. Yeah, go Hawks. Hey, Nick, weren't there big changes in the movie Vacation, too? Yes, there were. The ending that's in there now where John Candy plays the security guard and they pull the gun on him and force him to ride a whole bunch of rides and have fun at Wally World, even though Wally World is closed, that was not the original ending of the movie. The original ending of the movie was that they arrive at Wally World. Wally World is closed, and they go to the whoever Wally, Mr. Wally, who's obviously patterned after Disney. They go to his house and kidnap him. They hold him hostage until they open up the. The police show up and they open up the, and then they're going to open it up. The amusement park, but it did not go over well at all. So they brought in John Candy, and they thought, okay, let's just have John Candy be funny, and have them ride the, you know, the coasters and all that stuff, and end with the way it ends, where they're forgiven and everything is a happy ending. Now here's the way you can tell that's true. When was the last time you saw Vacation?
Oh, man. It's not a movie I seek out, honestly. I'm not a huge fan of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I think I only recently learned to appreciate Christmas Vacation, but I have this thing with Chevy Chase.
There are movies that you don't like Fletch?
I like Fletch. I don't love Fletch.
Spies Like Us? Three Amigos?
Yes. I'll give you Three Amigos. Right. I spent a lot of time not watching Chevy Chase growing up. I watched him on Community, and I knew about everything that was going on, and it just made me really dislike him.
Yeah, well, he's been a jerk since Saturday Night Live.
Right. Sometimes I can't get
there are times when he's really funny, and Vacation is one of those times. He's hilarious in Vacation. But here's the thing. Anthony Michael Hall plays Rusty in the first Vacation, because different actors played the kids in all the movies. They did not have the Rusty and Audrey were not the same actors in any of the movies.
Wasn't Jason Lively?
Jason Lively was in European Vacation.
Blake's older brother?
Yeah. So anyway, here's how you can tell they reshot it, because they tested it at the ending where they kidnap Roy Wally. And people hated it. People were like, no, we can't stand this ending. And so they tested it with audiences. And then they were like, they told Ramis, you got to reshoot
need
this.
Something else.
So that's when they put together the ending with John Candy and all that stuff. And that went over better. But the problem was, it was 3 months, a little more than 3 months, between when they wrapped and when they had to go back and do the reshoots. If you watch the movie, Rusty grows about a foot and a half because Anthony Michael Hall hit puberty during that 3 month spot, and he's like a foot taller, and it's noticeable if you watch the scenes.
It's kind of like how they had to de-age what's his name, Finn Wolfhard, a little bit in It Chapter Two, so he would look like him 2 years ago,
yeah. Hey, you can't stop that kind of thing. You can't stop puberty. That's a little different than Melanie Griffith getting a boob job in between.
Yeah. She had control over that.
Exactly. 724 area code says, I read that Danny DeVito said that in War of the Roses, the dog was always meant to survive, but both Oliver and the audience were supposed to think she killed it until later in the movie before the reveal. But because of the outrage, they put that insert in immediately following that scene. Here's why I find that it might be conflicted. In the book that it's based on, she makes the dog into pate. Because War of the Roses is based on a book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in the book, she makes pate out of the dog. So
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would like that kind of dog pate. I think it might be a little rough.
I don't know. It always kills me when it's okay. You know, like you can have 50 million people die in a movie and then one animal dies and people go, oh!
They're sacred.
Yeah.
I don't get it, but I understand it.
No, I understand it. People have that attachment. That's fine. You know, but I always find it kind of amusing. Well, what, how did you feel about the 12 people who were killed in that scene?
Could have used for a few more.
Yeah. 847 area code, pretty in pink test release. It was Andy and Ducky, but in the regular release, it was Andy and Blaine. That's
which
true.
This is the better ending. In, no one would ever wind up with Ducky.
In the original ending, she went with Ducky, and then they changed it, and they changed it to Blaine because people wanted her to go with Blaine.
Good.
But then he corrected that with some kind of wonderful, because Eric Stoltz does not end up with Leia Thompson.
No.
Eric Stoltz ends up with Mary Stuart Masterson, ends up with Watts. But Watts is a lot cooler than Ducky.
Yeah, Ducky's super lame.
Yeah.
And he's played by John Cryer?
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. How about this? Cliffhanger. Rennie Harlan, which means automatically good.
Isn't he? He's Finnish, right?
Yes, he's Finnish. Yeah. And he's Nordic with hair, big long blonde hair and a big beard.
He's wild.
And he's like 6'8".
He's out of his mind, that
I
guy.
I love Rennie Harlan.
Yeah, I know, but he's nuts.
And this is an interesting one. In the trailer for Rennie Harlan's 1993 hit Cliffhanger, Sylvester Stallone is seen jumping from one cliff to another. It's a 40-foot leap. When test audiences were presented with this, they guffawed. The reason, they didn't buy it could be possible. As such, the jump was re-edited, ironically, needing the help of CG work to make the jump appear shorter. Yeah, like, that's the logical issue that people have with Cliffhanger. Oh, I bought everything else. Everything else is perfectly believable in Cliffhanger, except I didn't buy him jumping from one cliff to the other.
Yeah, no way.
All right. How about this? Dirty Dancing. The film that firmly put the late Patrick Swayze on the movie star map, it's a movie he talked about extensively in his autobiography, in which he reveals how he was struggling due to injury with the dancing scenes. Swayze's book makes it sound like he was always confident about the film, but at one stage the film was going to bypass cinemas altogether. Early test audiences' reaction were hostile, and at one point it was going to be straight to video. That's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. That movie was going to go straight to video. Vestron Video was going to release it.
No way.
Yes, Vestron Video.
Like Return of the Living Dead Part 3?
Vestron Video. Oh, they were very popular. In the 80s, they were a real popular video company.
Yeah.
And so they were like, this thing's not going to... Their test audiences were bad for Dirty Dancing. And then they were like, listen, let's just release it in a few theaters and see what happens. And then the song came out. I've had the time of my life. And it became a hit. And they were like, get this movie into theaters now. Got it into theaters, became a smash hit, and the legendary movie that it is now.
They almost did put Baby in the corner.
Yeah, nobody does, though.
No.
Not even Jerry Orbach. Not even Jerry Orbach can put Baby in the corner. And just for the record, I love Dirty Dancing. I love that movie. So, not even ironically. Like, for real. I'm for real, Aaron. Okay. Hey, tomorrow... Dan Feinberg's going to join us for Triple Play Thursday as well, and we're going to talk lots of TV to talk about. And we are going to get to the limited edition fast food items as well. That'll be coming up tomorrow on the show. So, so join us. Dan Feinberg, got a lot to talk about. I have to talk with him now that I've seen Primal.
Oh, yeah.
Have to talk to him about that. So, okay, that's coming up on the show tomorrow, Thursday morning. And stay tuned because the opening bell with Steve Grzanich is next, and Steve Cochran comes up at 6. So stay tuned right here on WGN.